are expecting Fish SA. I did receive an apology from Mr. Panchwa, and we are expecting as well the commercial fishing companies. We will begin to know them as we proceed, and when I say we, I'm talking about the members of the portfolio committee.
I'm here as a member.
Yes, welcome, honorable members.
Yes.
We also expect a delegation from the department because the next item from the first one would be a presentation by the department to small-scale fisheries. So those are the people we expect. I'm looking at the list as people come in. So, but you are all welcome. For now, I'm unable to pronounce people by name and their titles and their responsibilities until we know all of them. My apologies for that. We should have had that list on time. As the portfolio committee, as you might be aware, we are almost an extension of Parliament in terms of Section 42, Subsection 3 of the Constitution. Our task is to represent people, to make people feel that they are participating on issues of government. So that is our main task. And number two, we create a forum for people to debate issues and discuss them. So we can't discuss issues if we don't know. So it's always good to know. And we go beyond that to actually oversee actions of the executive. When I say oversee, we are not the executive. We don't act. We oversee their action as they continue to execute what they are expected to do in terms of the Constitution. But basically today, what informed this session, we did meet with organizations of the industry. And I know Fish SA did make a presentation, though they could not complete what they were doing. So would like them to introduce what we'd be talking about today, and in particular, because this was a request from the commercial companies to say they want an opportunity to introduce themselves to the portfolio committee. So our main purpose for the first item on the agenda. I'm not sure who is that right now. Our first item would be the introduction by the commercial fishing companies. Then the second item would be a presentation, which would be a feedback to the small scale fishers. And so one would first secretary, any apologies, so that you can formally know who is in apologies.
Chair, we have received apologies from Minister, Deputy Minister, and Mr. Paulson.
Okay. I think we note that.
Chairperson, sorry, it's Singh here. I may have to leave around 11:30, but I will let you know. But I think around 11:30.
Okay. Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. The introduction by the commercial fishing companies, and well, of course, there would be questions, issues that we might want to raise as the committee. And then after that, we close that one, then come with the second one, presentation. Any proposal for adoption of that agenda? Honorable members?
I move, Chairperson, for adoption.
Honorable Singh? Any other member who would want to support?
So, supporting Chair Ganjo.
Honorable Ganjo. Thank you very much. I think there's no objection. Can we quickly then ask Fish SA to lay the context for these companies that must introduce themselves, and just to get us a sense as to what are the, because we don't know. Most of us, we are new members, and unfortunately, at this break of this COVID, that could not allow us to work for almost 6 months. By the time we would have known each other. So I think as we continue, I'm thinking like Xhasa, who is chairperson of this portfolio committee. As we continue, Fish SA.
Honorable Chairperson, it's Shamita Daniels. I'm here today representing myself, but I am the Vice Chair of Fish SA, and I'm not sure Mr. Pontra has submitted his apology.
Yes.
My understanding was this request originated from the Portfolio Committee and not from Fish SA or this meeting. So it's very difficult for me to say beyond that there are fishing companies represented who were asked to introduce themselves to the Portfolio Committee. Beyond that, I can't say anything further as the Vice Chair of Fish SA.
No, that's good. We appreciate that. I think, like I said earlier, there was a presentation to the Portfolio Committee by Fish SA.
Yes.
But I know we did not complete that task. But we're still also learning as to how are you organized as the industry. So all we wanted was not to jump and say, companies, speak for yourselves, and the next time you ask us questions. But I think basically the request for introduction was from the commercial fishing companies. But then we were told they are under your organization. So I think without wasting much time, then I will say let them do that.
Honorable,
let them introduce.
Can I just clarify? In our presentation, we did request that each sector, because there's 22 sectors in the fishing industry, that each sector also does a presentation to the Portfolio Committee, over and above companies introducing themselves to the Portfolio Committee. So you would have the West Coast Rock Lobster sector doing a presentation, like Deep Sea Trawl doing a presentation, because all the sectors are so different. The request is that they each get equal time to deal with their specific issues.
Now, if we have time, can we then start with the companies?
So, good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and colleagues. So, as I've previously said, I wear many hats in the fishing industry, but today for this presentation, I'm wearing the hat of a right holder. And I've provided the presentation provides for the information around one of the companies that I've shareholding in, which is Soundprops Investments, shareholding in a small like deep sea trawl right as well through a company called Fado Fishing. I think firstly, before I start my presentation, I would be remiss to express my concern that of the companies invited today, I'm actually the only SMME and at the lower end of medium, if you look at my turnover. And I would request that the portfolio committee have a dedicated session with SMMEs to deal with our issues and concerns around the next few months. Because fishing is very different from SMMEs operate in a different environment than anywhere else, because our businesses are determined by what government gives us, not by what we produce or what we grow. Government decides the size of our business. So that would be a request from my side. And I'll go into further detail, hopefully, on the day that you accede to my request for an SMME session. But I want to thank you for the opportunity to introduce myself and my companies. I'm just having trouble going my screen seems to have frozen, Honorable Chair.
It's frozen.
Yeah. Can I make a request? Sorry for this. If I could leave the meeting and you take the next presentation and come back, because I need to rejoin. If you don't.
Okay. Can we get to the next presentation, Secretary?
Iran.
Next presentation.
Mr. Somra. Oceana. Hi.
It's Singh here, Chairperson.
Honorable Singh.
Yes. Yeah, Member Singh, I think, sorry for the intervention. I think Ms. Daniels has made a very important point there about the small-scale fishermen and the large, you know, the very large-scale, because one notices that you've got small-scale fishermen, persons like SMMEs that she referred to, and then you've got subsistence fishers. And I see that we've received a presentation from the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance on subsistence fishers. And the presentations that we received are from very large trawlers and things like that. So perhaps we need to separate this and then we come up with a comprehensive thing later on. So I think I agree with the proposal she's made.
Noted, because like we are saying, we're not doing this for the last time and for the first time. But I think we have noted what she was saying. But can we continue so that at least we are able to see who is coming in now? Oceana.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Yes, thank you. A bit earlier than we expected, but we're happy to get the meeting going. Honorable Chair, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I think the point is well made that today appears to be mainly presentations by the bigger commercial fishing companies. And I guess that needs to be the context largely of today's conversation. Chairperson, I just want to check. We have also circulated our presentation. I am going to share the screen and I will just ask for confirmation that the committee members are able to see my screen.
Yes, we can.
Thank you, Chair. I will attempt to keep to the time frame that's been allocated. We believe it's 20 minutes, Chair. I will try and get through the slides fairly quickly on the assumption that it's distributed and obviously take questions at the end. Also, if time permits, we have a video that we'd like to share of about 2 or 3 minutes. And if you will permit me a time, if we've got time at the end, I would like to play that video. But moving on fairly swiftly, we will cover today what you've requested in terms of the sequence of matters to cover our transformation credentials after the brief introduction on who we are, our contribution to the SA economy, our response to COVID-19 in particular, and then any discussions that the chair or our committee. We believe that for company, corporate company, creating sustainable and continued value, impacting the lives positively of all of our stakeholders, but we retain our strong South African identity. Strong roots and loyalty are to our South African founders. The fact that what guides a lot of our actions is our core purpose, and it's based on a very simple philosophy, that those of us who live above the breadline owe it to those who live below the breadline to improve the quality of their lives. And this dictates many of our actions and our decisions as a corporate citizen in this country. We embrace diversity. We're energized by the joy of service. And in particular, I hope you'll see this come through in our presentation, that when we do things for the betterment of society, those are things that stimulate and inspire us. And we see our stakeholders, whether it be governments, customers, communities, as partners. And I think you'll find, Chairperson, in all of the presentations today, not just ours, that there's a strong recognition that business and government need to walk a path together to restore stimulus to our economy, which is, as we all know, the straits we just faced. I think that marching that yay is an opportunity for government to work. Ocean Diverse Fishing Company, and I hope you can see the slide. I indicated earlier, we are a diverse global fishing company. 32% of our operations, our revenue streams sit in South Africa, but we are based in the Western Cape. We have the predominant we have most of our factory operations in the Western Cape. We also have fishing operations in Namibia, where we operate off quota obtained in Namibia from the Namibian government. We also have fishing operations in North America, where we operate from quota obtained from the American partnerships there. As I said earlier, our strong loyalty to South Africa, what I can confirm with you is that, and the committee members, is that over the last 5 years, notwithstanding our diverse operations and our income streams all over the world, we have brought back into South Africa over 2 billion rands from dividends and earnings of quota other
Sorry, Chair. Chairperson. Chair.
Yes.
Chairman, we have people who have not muted. Can those people who have not muted their mics please mute their mics because they are disturbing us?
Thank you very much. Otherwise, I was not sure what is happening because can't hear him well. Please, honorable members and those who are locked in. Thank you. Over to you. Continue, honorable Sumbra.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will also admit that it's the first time I've been called honorable Chairperson, so I thank you for that. You've made my day. Honourable members and Chairperson, I think this is a fact which not many people will know, that on average, only 35% of the canned fish consumed in South Africa, so whether it's Lucky Star or Saldana or all of the other brands, only 35, you know, on average over African waters. Over the last 3 years in particular, and this year is an example, around 98% of the country's fish supply has come from elsewhere in the world. I guess this is something we want to understand. Cyclical shortage of poachers in South Africa, you know, fishing species go through cyclicality, and we've seen over the last 2 to 3 years in particular. We expect that to continue into this year with some restoration, that there is a cyclical shortage. But our global procurement strategy, along with other fishing companies, means that we are able to import pilchards from elsewhere in the world. And from a Lucky Star point of view, the ability that we, the fact that we've been able to leverage these partnerships has preserved the jobs of more than 2,500 employees at our canneries on the Cape West Coast, while continuing to provide food security of over, you know, 3 million meals of Lucky Star get consumed in South Africa on a daily basis. So what we wanted to demonstrate here is that along with, you know, being able to be a global company, we're also securing jobs on the West Coast in line with our promise that we, you know, we are loyal to the South African economy over the longer term. Chairperson, as requested, we were asked to demonstrate our transformation credentials. And you'll see here that from a DTI scorecard point of view, Oceania has demonstrated commitment. And since 2010, when we were level 3 BE compliant, we're now level 1 in 2019, after having dedicated a lot of effort into transformation. And I can confirm that we expect to be higher in 2020 from the levels that we're demonstrating on the slide. In 2004, we implemented a strategy to advance across all BE pillars. We've never been below level 3 since 2013. Last year, we were the most empowered food, consistently being the top 5 most empowered companies on the JSE. We've achieved significant points for board, non-executive and director composition, which I'll demonstrate now. Our black ownership has increased from 45% in 2010 to 72% in 2019. Female ownership, black female ownership, up from 11 to 24%. And over 90% of our workforce is predominantly historically disadvantaged individuals. And female historically disadvantaged individuals have risen from 35% in 2010 to 41% in 2019. The next slide, Chairman, is a bit about ownership, and this is something we're exceptionally proud of. The Oceania Empowerment Trust is a star scheme that we established over 12 years ago. This trust has over 2,400 beneficiaries, and the trust is meant to vest sometime in January next year. I can confirm, if you look at the right-hand side of the slide, and Chairman, I assume you can see the pointer now, if someone can just confirm for me. But on average, the average beneficiary has received to date 75,000 rands in cash dividends. There was an interim payout in 2014 of 136,000, and we expect the estimated final payout to these beneficiaries to be about 200,000. So the average blue-collar worker will receive over 412,000 rands. This is net of tax. And from our point of view, this is true empowerment. I can also say to you that there are 25 to 30 skippers, vessel skippers that participate in the scheme, and we're hoping that many of them will become millionaires overnight when the scheme vests in January next year, which, as I indicated, is, I believe, a significant shift towards true transformation. In
the Sumra, just the screen is not moving.
Thank you for sharing that. I thought you were going through the slides. Felix, can you confirm now?
Confirmed, Imran. It has moved now to slide 3.
All right. Chairman, I apologize for that. This is the screen earlier. I'm on slide 5. This is the screen earlier where we demonstrated our global footprint. And the fact that we are home-based in South Africa. I've spoken to the next slide on Lucky Star and its procurement strategy. And Chairman, if I may then just reiterate this slide where our BE levels are at level 1 BE compliant level with significant ownership across the board, and our black ownership at 45% in 2010 to 72% in 2019. This was the slide that I was reminded of. Thank you very much, Felix, for that. Again, on the right-hand side, an average beneficiary will receive over 412,000, which is significant value created for our over 2,400 staff employees. This is our leadership team, Chair, and portfolio committee. And as you can see, These are the individuals that lead the overall OCEAN organization from an executive and non-executive director point of view and senior positions in the business. This constitutes 71% historically disadvantaged individuals, up from 40% in 2010, female representation at 41% from 18% in 2010, and then white males from 55% to 24%. And I guess this is, you know, one of the indictments of listed companies on the stock exchange in particular, you know, the rest of corporate South Africa, is that there hasn't been significant transformation at a leadership level. I think this slide demonstrates that Oceana has made a commitment to transformation in that space. This team I'm particularly proud of, Chairman. This is the team that facilitates the production of Lucky Star at all of our factories in South Africa and in Namibia. And you can see that enviably, this is a very diverse team. Headed up by Mr. Suleiman Sully, but very proud of the fact that Olwethu Malaza is our operations director. He oversees the production of over 300 million cans of Lucky Star on an annual basis. Olwethu started off as an engineer in one of our factories and has now advanced. Again, testament to what we're doing to advance previously disadvantaged people and provide the right skills and opportunity at the same time. Chairman, as you would know, transformation isn't only about ownership and isn't only about leadership, but it's also about spending on a procurement, skill development, and CSI point of view. You know, these slides have been circulated to the committee, but I really just want to focus on the fact that we spent, and I think you'll find this as a consistent theme today in all of the fishing companies that present, there's a significant amount of spend on procurement with black suppliers, black female suppliers and SMMEs in the space throughout the value chain, not just SMMEs in the fishing space, but also SMMEs in the transport space, in the cleaning space, in the security space, in the marketing space. And you'll see here that Oceana spend in 2020 2.6 billion rand, of which mainly black female suppliers. So from a scorecard point of view, you can see that we score significantly well in the space. We spend this year around 35 million in skill development. And as I said earlier, around 90% of the Oceana workforce is black. And so we spend a lot of our money on those black individuals at the same time. A significant amount of contribution to CSI, over 7.4 million this year. I guess the one point I do want to make, Chairman, is that there is a scorecard, and the scorecard is legislated, and you'll find that a lot of the companies in the space spend a lot of time ensuring we comply with the scorecard. From an Oceana point of view, as I indicated earlier, we have significant operations in Namibia, not just because the scorecard dictates it. So I can also confirm with the committee that our operations in the USA, for example, are 85% using American terminology. Our cannery and our horse mackerel fishing business, led by Dr. Martha Umati, who is a historically disadvantaged Namibian female. So what I'm trying to demonstrate to the committee is that notwithstanding the fact that in South Africa we have a scorecard that we all need to abide by, we abide by these principles no matter where we operate in the rest of the world. Chairman, I am trying to speed this along because I'm aware that, you know, there's a lot of presentations to come. You've asked for us to demonstrate our economic contribution, and we've tried to demonstrate this on one slide. So Oceana has over 4,000 direct employees, and that converts to, in 2015, to induced employment and indirect employment across the value chain and the full-time employment to approximately 45,000 jobs. These jobs consist across all of our operations. Our annual wage bill is just over 575 million, and we've contributed over the period, over the 10-year period or 15-year period rather, 4 billion rand in taxes into the government fiscus. our total exports earnings that have come back into the country, as I demonstrated earlier. We're an export company primarily outside of Lucky Star. A lot of our product goes into Europe and goes into Asia. Those exports have exceeded 18.5 billion for the 15-year period from 2005, and therefore we believe that we have made a substantial contribution to South Africa's exports earnings and earnings in euros and dollars in particular. More importantly, I think, Chairperson, is what are, as I said earlier, what are companies doing with this responsibility? So the allocation of fishing rights, whether it's in South Africa or Namibia or the US in our instance, comes with it a responsibility. That responsibility is one to create economic growth and to grow society, and in particular to, in my view, to address some of the imbalances in society. So we believe as Oceana we have a role to play, and some of the projects that we're undertaking, which I'll take you through now, is an investment firstly in the Oceana Maritime Academy. That academy will contribute to the skills development within the sector, and over a 10-year period, we anticipate that we will spend over 400 million rands on that academy. We're embarking together with the Lobster Association on a lobster traceability project. We're not heading it, we're assisting in it because we participate in the lobster sector. We're also envisaging, we're particularly excited about the fact that we would like to, pending shareholder approval, launch a second empowerment scheme for staff in SMMEs of approximately 500 million. I think the most important thing I want to highlight is that 80 million of this project, 80 million of this transaction will be allocated to SMMEs that we participate with. So this empowerment scheme will not just benefit ocean employees, but SMMEs across the board and small-scale fishermen, because I'm aware that that is an imperative of government and particularly of this committee. And so we're going to be allocating a sizable stake in Oceana's capital to the development of these businesses, obviously who have a stake in the sector across all of the value chain. We're also making a commitment to reduce our carbon emissions. As of October this year, we formally announced that we will reduce our carbon emissions by 50% in the next 10 years. We're embarking in a solar farm project in St. Helena Bay, which we believe will not only create jobs in its construction phase, but will create jobs over sustaining the solar project. But
thank you very much. Clearly, I was not as quick as I thought I would be. Let me fairly quickly cover the Oceana Maritime Academy, just to demonstrate, Chairman, that the Academy is up and running. Like the entire fishing community, members of the portfolio community, honorable members of the portfolio, and the Department of Fisheries to participate in this project, and we'll be announcing in due course. Chairman, I do want to then cover fairly quickly COVID-19, because that was requested by us from an Oceana point of view, guided by the directors to provide food security and keep our employees. In essence, we heard from our workforce and across the workforce, whether it was in other fishing companies, we dealt together. But there was a fear amongst our workers that we will not provide safe working environments. At this point, Chairman, I do want to pause just to acknowledge the significant contribution from the Fishing Ministry, Honourable Minister Barbara Creasy, and her team in particular, in engaging through the industry associations with us in our time of need. We needed a lot of guidance, particularly on labor matters, particularly on getting us access to test kits
and healthcare during the crisis. And I do want to commend the minister and her team in particular for we've played a significant role in providing food relief to communities in need, and we continue to do so, again, in conjunction with the Fisheries Ministry. And I then want to just end off, Chairperson, with this last slide, which is perhaps a little bit philosophical, but I think important that we convey how we're feeling. I'm obviously speaking on Oceana's behalf, but I'm pretty sure that the other fishing CEOs who present today will convey some of the sentiments. And the sentiments are that we feel that the time is right for business and government, big business in particular in the fishing sector, to engage and structure a common purpose and structure solutions that contribute to the development of our economy, continued development of our economy in all sectors across the board. And so I guess, as I said, a little bit philosophical, but some of the lessons we learned, the emergence of the Black Lives Matter cause being based in the US, is that these are points that I do want to highlight. One, that diversity, equality, and inclusivity have to take center stage in everything that we do. Empowerment of the disempowered. We've understood, and I think the world has understood that people are more important than profits. We've learned that power and privilege mean nothing. So it doesn't matter whether you
then move to the second secretary, who is the next presenter.
Samira Daniel Chipperson.
Okay. Hi. I'm coming again. Are you going to share or do you want me to share? Chairperson.
Yes. Honorable Mbata.
I've got a problem when we receive presentation very late. I've just received the previous presentation, and it's very difficult to engage on the presentation when you receive it very late, because we're supposed to go through and prepare ourselves for this meeting. I don't know how does it happen, because we've been talking about this in this PC to say we must get the presentation prior so that we can prepare ourselves. The others, we received it yesterday, but this one, we received it just now. Just now. And
noted,
I mean that...
Honorable Mbata, we have noted your concern. I think we'll talk about it when we discuss. Can we allow the second presenter to present?
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I want to apologize earlier for the technical glitch. I'm hoping that everything runs smoothly now. Just to reiterate the request for the specific SMME engagement, but I will start my presentation now because I know we're short on time. As I indicated earlier, I represent two fishing companies, and the one is very small, and so I didn't put much information into the presentation. I focused on the bigger one, which is Sound Props Investments 1167. We operate in the, we have two fishing rights, a small pelagic right and a hake long line right. And I'm very proud of the fact that we have become meaningful players in both sectors. As you can see, we have three vessels. Two, we own 100% of the vessel, one in the small pelagic sector and one in the hake long line sector. And then we've also got a 10% stake in a hake long line vessel. And I think for us, it's indicative that even with small allocations, we have been able to make inroads and become meaningful players in the fishing industry. In terms of the other company that I haven't made slides for, Sado Fishing, we've got a Patagonian toothfish right, and we're in a JV, as most people are in that sector. And then we've got a very, very small hake deep sea trawl right of only 165 tons. And should we be given the opportunity in the SMME forum, the issue of viability becomes very, very important. I remember somebody made a joke with me once and said, you can't even run a fish up on 165 tons of hake deep sea trawl. So it's something that we want the department to be, or the portfolio committee to take cognizance on. Yes, we have SMMEs, but viability is very important, and that is in the hands of government, not in our hands. The companies, the Sound Props, I'm very proud to say we're 96% black owned, and we're 85% black female owned and managed. I'm involved in every single day-to-day operation, and I'm very proud of that. As you know, because our turnover is under 10 million, we don't do the full triple BEE scorecard. So we automatically are level 2. I can state that we are committed to procurement from black-owned companies, as I think that is a fundamental for us to grow the economy in South Africa. This is something I'm exceptionally proud of. So the rights that we have, the approximate value is 6.8 million for this season, right? But because we've invested in vessels and we've got an administrative team that helps us, we've created as Sound Props 52 direct jobs. And our vessels employ 42 people. We've got a workshop that we've established that assists in the maintenance of our own vessels, and we've got 3 staff in the office. And I think, yeah, it's something I'm very, very proud of. In terms of the other company, Sado Fishing, sadly, we have a vessel that has a crew complement of 60-plus crew, but due to our quota not being large enough, we aren't able to operate the vessel. So that is jobs that could be created, but we have not been able to create, or we've lost over the last few years. And then just from a COVID-19 response, I think because we are a much smaller company, so there was an initiative started by Fish SA in conjunction with the minister, which we coordinated all our contributions towards, because that went to feeding schemes to different communities throughout South Africa. And it's something that we're very proud of, that we were able to keep 100% staff complement during the COVID times. There were issues, and as Mr. Sumra indicated, I also just want to reiterate, the, you know, Minister Creasy and her department was, I know this might sound a bit over the top, but it was truly amazing with different crises that came up during the time. My presentation is short and sweet, so I think I've made up for the 3 minutes that Mr. Sumras went over. If I'm welcome any questions when the opportunity is given. Thank you.
We will ask questions at the end. Can we move to the third presenter? Secretary, who comes in the third spot?
It's Premier Fishing Chairperson.
Hi, Chairperson. It's Rushan Isaac from Premier Fishing. We will share our screen shortly. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and our colleagues from the fishing industry. We've just shared our PDF presentation, and we actually tried to also share our screen video as well, but we're not successful in doing that. So first I'd like to introduce myself as Rushan Isaacs. I've been appointed as CEO in February 2020. So indeed it has been interesting times, you know, to become a CEO considering the year we've had. But it's, thank you for the portfolio committee for giving or allowing us the opportunity to introduce ourselves as well. I have Mandla Mubusi with me as our public regulatory affairs person as well. Okay, so we'll take you to the next slide. Okay, so just to give you an indication of our current organogram, so Premier Fishing and Brands is our listed company. Premier Fishing SA is our operational company, and the subsidiaries is Marine Growers, where our aquaculture farm is situated in, and then we've got the Prem Fresh Seafoods, where our sales and marketing department is located in. And then we've also got Telado, where we own 50.3% stake in. Okay, the company overview, Premier Fishing, we're largely a aquaculture group. We've listed and commercial fishing group. We've listed on the JSE Stock Exchange on the 3rd of March 2017. Our previous year revenue, financial year, we achieved 575 million. 85% of our products are exported, 50% sent into the local market. We've got in total of 34 vessels across all our sectors. I will go through the sectors in the next slide, which is valued at 166 million. Our biggest project at the moment is the expansion of our abalone farm, which is based in Sandfire. In the last 2 years, we've invested 200 million at the farm. Currently, our biological assets estimate value is 102. The plants and equipment across all our sectors is currently estimated at 100 million. So we are sort of, okay, one of the largest black-owned managed companies, but at the same time, if you look at our turnover, of course, not close to our you know, our colleagues or competitors in the market space. So we've got a diverse product of baskets, a basket of products, mainly West Coast and South Coast lobster, squid, cultivated abalone. We're involved in the pelagics. We've got a small stake in hake and with mackerel sectors. Right. Our accreditations are, as you can see, we South African fishing ethically, and of course the FDA and ASIC compliance. So just in terms of our transformation, this is where we'd like to maybe just take some time on. We're very proud of the fact that firstly, we've got the first female CEO in the South African fishing sector. We've also got our first female chairperson on our board of the Premier Fishing and Plans Group. We're in the process as well of restructuring Premier Fishing SA's shareholding. So we recently embarked on a implementation of a BEE share trust, as well as a BE consortium, which will take up 30% of Premier Fishing SA's shares. We're still in the process of executing this transaction. So in our next meeting, we'll be able to give you details thereof. We currently employ just over 900 staff members across the group. Our equity ratio, so 90% of our staff are from the impoverished fishing communities. For example, we've got sites in Saldanha Bay, Hyde Bay, Hyde Bay, Humansdorp. So, of course, at those locations, we employ staff in those communities. As you can see, our staff retention is between 10 and 40 years. So we're quite proud of that as well. We've got a bursary scheme going, a learnership program as well. And I'd just like to highlight, you know, staff health and safety and job security is very vital to our group. So I'm saying that regardless of current COVID-19, but, you know, during COVID-19 especially, we have to obviously ensure the safety of our staff. In the last year, we've actually been able to employ 100 staff members in the Hans Bay Bisselslag area due to our expansion on the farm. So that's a huge drive we've embarked on as well. On our BE credentials, so our Premier Fishing SA, our Marine Growers Subsidiary and Salado have been able to attain level 1 BE scorecard. In procurement spend, we in excess of 100 million. From our 200 suppliers, which is majority black owned, and that's including SMMEs, EMEs, and QSEs, right? So this is a very important fact for us, as well as Imran mentioned earlier. We're very focused on supporting smaller black-owned companies, especially, and also, you know, we strive on sort of ESG initiatives through this procurement initiatives as well. Okay, next slide. So this is just an indication of our social responsibility. So we're involved in quite a few sponsorships in our social responsibility. For example, there's the NSRI. We've also got housing developments in Saldanha Bay where our current employees benefit from. We've assisted the Somerset Hospital as well. We've involved in quite a few schools as well in the various communities that we are active in. And in terms of COVID-19, we've also donated food parcels to relevant staff in the communities we're involved in, and as well as rice holders who's associated with our group. So in the Prem Fresh company, one of our subsidiaries, we've got a group, a team actually, that's quite involved in assisting and developing rice holders within the various communities involved in, for example, Worston, Claymont, Saldanha, Hard Bay, etc. So the type of assistance we provide rice holders, we've got a qualified on-site health and safety manager who provides free health and safety training. We've also embarked on providing training from getting a qualified SARS official financial planning to assist him with taxes and financial planning, especially in those communities where it is a bit of an issue in terms of managing finances. We've also educated them importance of how to manage their business, right, as a business. We've also exposed them to overseas markets and giving them an understanding of how it works and the returns that they could, you know, attain in market-related agreements. Allowed them to leverage from our procurement spend to attain competitive prices, etc. We're currently assisting 132 rice holders per annum and indirectly feeding 800 families through this process. COVID was, of course, thrown us all off our, day-to-day standard practice of operating. We've brought together a COVID risk assessment team, implemented policies, and this was critical for us in terms of maintaining the safety of our staff members, considering how the virus was sort of expanding at the time. This is just an idea of the protocol, the standard protocols we had in place. We had two incidences at two of our facilities. We've covered all the medical costs. We've covered certain costs in terms of isolation, where certain staff members had to isolate separately to their families. So we were quite involved in these sort of ventures as well. That's just continuation. We had regular, of course, decontamination that took place. And we made sure that we were abreast of rapid changes and were closely with the Department of Labor, SAMHSA, and of course the department as well. So that, in a nutshell, that's pretty much it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chaplain.
No, I'm there. Thank you very much. We will ask questions at the end. Can we now move to the next one?
Chair, can I get this presentation? I don't have it also. I think Chilega must just check the presentation that we don't have instead of us asking one by one.
I've sent this presentation to the WhatsApp group members.
I think we'll follow up on that. Can we
It's those presentations that came after I sent the invite yesterday that members do not have.
No, this one is, sorry, Chair, for the dialogue. This one is not there. I've checked it on the, it's only the two. One, the one that was done by some drops that you sent, and that the other one, the first one. So the other one, please just check, because you are making our life very difficult. Firstly, this presentation came late. We can't engage on this presentation when they come this late. At least have it in.
I think we have noted this item for discussion, this thing of late submission and the receipt. Can we allow I and J to present?
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. It's John T. Yankovic here, and I have my colleague Vincent Dewey, who is in another location, but he'll be driving the slides. I hope everyone has a copy of the slides. If not, we'll make sure you get a copy. Apologies for confusion. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. Honourable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, this is a wonderful opportunity. Thank you very, very much. I'd prefer to be sitting face to face with you, but under these circumstances, COVID, the challenges we face, it's a wonderful opportunity, nevertheless, to engage with you. So if I can just run through the slide deck, this is, there's lots of, like my colleague's slides, there's lots of data points. I'm not going to talk to every data point. I'm going to pick up on the main themes and summarize some of the main points with the intention of meeting your objectives of the agenda. So if I can ask my colleague just to click to the next slide. And Jay is broken into two parts. It's a deep sea, and aligned to that hake deep sea fishing, as you can see on the left of that slide. We have a right in the inshore sector, and then to a smaller degree, we have smaller rights in toothfish and horse mackerel. So we do understand those fisheries similarly. And on the right-hand side, we have an aquaculture business, which is predominantly an abalone business, and that is based in the towns of Gansbaai and Hermanus. And over and above that, it's worth noting that we have a joint up in the Port Elizabeth area, and that's to do with squid fishing. So as a company, our primary focus is on a hake and an abalone, but we do have involvement and do understand other sectors of the fishery, which is very useful, and we do obviously contribute in those sectors as well. So moving on to the next slide, I guess it's got a wonderful picture of the dangerous environment that we operate in. I think that's a message I'd like to get across to you all. If you don't know that already, apologies for being so blunt and obvious. But the other key message is that I&J has been a business for coming up to 110 years. On the 16th of November, we turned 110. So a long legacy as a business, as a company, and a long history with many customers, but importantly, many employees, and a good few of them are in their third generation of working at I&J. So I'm certainly very proud of that legacy. To the next slide, really just talking to the capital intensity of our business. It's obvious in one respect. We have complex and expensive fishing vessels. They're very complex machines with a number of components that all need to work well for it to perform. We invest significantly, as the slide said, between 40 and 100 million rand a year to maintain those vessels. And over the last couple of years, we've invested over 500 million rand as a business in both vessels and our factories. We have 10 fishing vessels. We fish out of Cape Town from the waterfront. We'd love to have you around to see that if you're willing and able. We also have 3 land-based factories, processing facilities in and around Cape Town. And I'll talk a little bit more about those in a moment. Of course, we have a freezer storage center also in Cape Town. The next slide, please, Inno. And I'm going to move quite fast. So our business is, and this is a very important point, this business of ours, and similar to my industry colleagues, is vertically integrated. We catch the fish a long way out at sea. We bring it back to our factories where we process that fish, and then we sell both domestically and internationally. I think important message here is the scale point. The business needs to be a scale business to support the vertical integration and to balance the risk that we as an organization and an operation have. And then the second, probably, or third important point here are those accreditations. I know we often put those up, and they don't often get commented on, but it's something that I think we take maybe a little bit too lightly as an organization, an industry, and maybe a country. We should be very proud of those accreditations, both in terms of the food safety standards that we operate in, our factories, and I know my colleagues are all similarly accredited. We have wonderful accreditations that allow us to sell overseas. It means that we operate at very high standards. And then similarly, on a sustainability level, we meet exceptionally high standards for both the Marine Seafood Council, the MSC, and they adjudicate the sustainability of fish, and the ASC, which is the Aquaculture Seafood Council, who govern sustainability of aquaculture. So having those accreditations is something that I think we all should be very proud of. Next slide, please, Innocent. A very busy slide, and again, I suppose similarly to our colleagues, we're a level one contributor and potential triple BEE. We employ significant staff, over 2,000 staff members. I'm not going to necessarily run through all of those data points, but you can see them for yourself. Significantly disadvantaged individuals, a number of benefits paid to those employees. Importantly, we have on-site and free clinics and medicine provided to all employees, both in our factory environments and our seagoing environments. We are unionized, so we support organized labor. And then to the economic contribution, we have a Black Staff Share Scheme, which has paid out significantly over the over the last couple of years. And of course, as a company our size, we can we contribute significantly to the fiscus each year. Next one, In terms of transformation, we are 37.2% Black owned. We obviously have direct Black employee shareholders, and then 73% of our staff are Black management. Education and training, and we'll talk a bit more about this a little later, but is really important to INJ. We spend significantly on that. And then really just to probably jump to the investment that we make in the non-government organizations and the corporate social responsibility, that's something that, again, we take very seriously. But the point I'd like to stress, and I think is useful, is this slide here that's on the screen now. And that's the investment that we make and we spend each year with small businesses. I don't think it's well understood that we, as some of the larger players, support and have supported and grown and made, to be honest, quite wealthy, a number of, 460 small businesses that we've partnered with and continue to grow and invest in over time. 85 of those are 100% Black owned, and you can see the numbers that we spend annually with these businesses. So this is an important, I guess, data point. We're not just a big company that does it all ourselves and keep all of the keep all the profits to ourselves. We do grow, develop, share, and invest in these small businesses, and have done over time, and will continue to do so into the future. So that's the key takeaway point. Just jumping to the next one, I'm just going to really run through the business at a sort of simplest level. Obviously, we are a fishing business. We have 10 vessels. They go to sea for up to 30 days. So it's complex. It's just expensive. It costs in the region or in excess of 200,000 rand a day for us to operate those vessels in the scary ocean. 660 employees in the division, both shore-based and seagoing. We have workshops, we have engineers, we have artisans, and of course, apprenticeships in terms of training. And those are the numbers at the bottom that we spend over the last 5 years in that division. So it is a significant risk area. It's a difficult environment that needs a lot of care and attention. And obviously, it demands significant money and investment to maintain that business and that operation. And of course, it's fundamental to the INJ business. That fish is caught and then moved to Woodstock and processed there. And there's a pack shot of the kind of product that we make and we sell in the shops in South Africa. And it employs in excess of 800 employees. It has an on-site clinic, as I said earlier. And there we make in the region of 130 products in that factory. And similarly, a factory of that size and that complexity with that number of people needs to be maintained, serviced and developed. And you can see the money that gets spent in there. And that excludes the complex machinery that I talked about investing in a little earlier. Another processing environment that we have is our value-added processing. This is based in Paarden Island, not too far away from us. 160 there we make 70. There's a pack shot of fish fingers, which I'm sure and I hope you all taste it and enjoy. It's a complex set of machinery, a complex plant, and demands significant capex and opex or repair maintenance investments each year. We sell our products both domestically and internationally. We sell into the retail environment here in South Africa, and we sell into the food service environment, to the likes of Bidvest and Spur, et cetera. And internationally, I think this is something that, again, we probably don't make too much fuss about, but something that as a portfolio committee, I hope you're proud of, as an industry, we are able to compete and have to compete at that international level in those markets, those sophisticated markets like Europe, UK, Australia, and the USA. So that those are the countries and the markets that we have to benchmark ourselves against, that we have to perform and operate against, and we need to maintain, I guess, the sophistication and the ability to be able to sell our products into those markets. Next slide is around people development, and I think I wanted to just stress a bit more about that. It's a complex business, as you can imagine, and there's an awful lot to learn in and around our business. It's got such variety from a capital-intensive operation at the fishing end all the way through to the delicate and sensitive pricing and promotion and brand and presentation of product, both domestically and internationally. So understanding that range, or being able to understand or to learn the business from one end to the other, is a wonderful opportunity. It certainly has been one of the most exciting businesses I've ever operated in. And I think we take pride in sharing that and making sure that we train our people. Maybe one of the main takeaways from this, and it's something that is quite astounding, but not fussed over, and I'm sure my colleagues do the same, but we have 469 learnerships. So it's almost like a small school that we run, where we train people and then bring them through into the organization. The bursaries that we offer, university graduate trainees, apprenticeships, internships, and then just the day-to-day on-the-job learning. Those are important things and important for both our company, but I think importantly and critical to the country and the country's development. The future is in the youth. Right, moving on to the other part of our business, and I'm just checking our time, Mr. Chair, hopefully I'm okay. The abalone business, if you could just move to the next one. As I said, it's based in Hermanus and Transpai, just under 180 employees. Importantly, it is ASC certified. It was the first certain Africa, and it might have been the second certification in the world. So again, we're able to compete with the best in the world, and I think that's an important point for the committee. It is a rather large farm, and it always astounds me that we pump 8.5 million liters per hour of seawater from the surrounding sea onto this farm, those tanks that you can see in that image, on the background of that image. Significant kelp is used in the feed, and that kelp is harvested and used. We use small businesses in and around the area to support us in harvesting the kelp, which we then procure and feed to our abalone. An expensive operation, as you can imagine, as you can see from that image, significant capex and repair maintenance gets applied to that business and to that division each year. A bit more about the industry, to the extent that you don't know, and I'll touch on the main points. 14 abalone farms. Abalone is the main aquaculture species in South Africa. It is the dominant species for aquaculture and the best able. The challenge that goes with it, though, is that it takes at least 4 years before the animal is ready for sale. So significant science that goes into spawning that animal and then growing it out, and it grows through a nursery, and then it grows into the grow-on tanks. And we obviously love and care for the animal through the cycle before we harvest it for sale. And it's a minimum of 4 years. So it's not an easy business, and you have to suffer the normal risks that go with a business like a farming operation. And we are even more complicated because we draw water from the sea. And the sea also has its challenges, the likes of which red tide is probably our most dangerous poison that we could ingest. So it's something that we have to manage against. I won't go through the rest of those points, but it's largely a Western Cape industry. And South Africa, although it's predominant in terms of its the species being farmed here, we only supply 3% of abalone to the world. I&J, we also have those two facilities capable of processing 600 tons of abalone per year and supplying at the moment incredibly difficult markets impacted by COVID. The next slide. Charity fund, but at the INJ level, we obviously worked incredibly hard. I think like most of our colleagues in most of industry who remained working from day one, I don't think, I think I might have spent 1 or 2 days away from work. Like most of my industry colleagues, we kept at the factories and supported the business through COVID, but obviously an incredibly difficult time. We gave lockdown allowances to staff. We increased our medical teams. We introduced free transport to facilitate transport for staff to get to work. We set up a call center. We obviously made and handed out a number of food parcels to both INJ staff and communities, and invested significantly in the prevention and screening in excess of 18 million rand in just a few months, and keep the business operational. So a tough time, but I think a tough time for everyone. Lots of lessons learned, a few scars taken, and I'm hoping that we are starting to see the back of it. The last slide, Mr. Chair and honourable members, are the key takeaways. If you remember nothing else, I thought I'd try and summarise maybe like my colleague, Mr. Sumra, some of the takeaways, and these are more industry-level takeaways than INJ-level takeaways. Fishing, and we are a respected industry, internationally competitive sector, diverse, risky, complex, and it is transformed as a sector, one of the most transformed industries in the country. We're an employment creator. We maximize our beneficiation locally. We have factories locally. We don't just catch and export. We process locally, which is good for jobs. We are a significant economic contributor. We invest, we employ, we pay taxes, we educate, we train, we support. Impact assessment at the outset to factually inform the FRAP process that is about to kick off. On the abalone, I think you might only be able to see 2 points there, but there are three. The first one is poaching. Twice the amount of abalone that we export is poached, at least. So that's destroying the ocean and destroying jobs, taking value from South African citizens. The businesses that have struggled through COVID really could do with some support. So it's something that it's worth stressing. We as a business are trying to support some of the smaller businesses, but I'm sure the government, to the extent that they can, it would be well appreciated. And then the last point, again, is a government-related support point, the Department of Trade and Industry. It would be very helpful to get some of their support, and I know that they are engaged, but it's a point just to stress, to build upon so that we can grow further markets and abalone. Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you for your time. I really do appreciate it. I know it was a quick run through, and I'll take questions a little later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll now call on C. Harvest, if I'm correct in terms of the queue.
Yes, you are, Honorable Chair. Can you see the screen right now, Honorable Chair?
Yes, I only hope it will move.
I hope so too, although the picture of Table Mountain is quite beautiful, I must say. Let's just have a look here, Chair, because sometimes it doesn't move, so we'll just have to just check if that moved there. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us to be here, Honorable Chair, in the Portfolio Committee. Change with the market cap over 4 billion. Our revenue is also about 4 billion, and we employ 3,230 people in fishing operations in South Africa. I also like to touch on, Honorable Chair, the same. We are a deep sea trawling company. I just wanted to give an example on a vessel that we acquired 3 years ago on the right-hand side. She's the Harvest Mzansi. We acquired her in 2017 for a total cost of 250 million rand. She goes out to sea for 50 days. Any type of fishing. Here we are talking the most capital intensive. So in an airline industry, this would be, Sea Harvest would be the equivalent of an Emirates or a British Airways. And we own all our vessels. I think importantly, the second thing is that we also own and operate all our processing plants. On the left-hand side is our processing plant in Saldanha Bay. That entire strip is 1 kilometer in length. You can see the fuel bunkers there. We consume around 30 million liters a year. We're probably one of the biggest users of fuel in the Western Cape. And we operate mostly in rural towns like Saldanha Bay and Mossel Bay. Importantly also, we sell product to 26 countries out of our business, and you can see the names of ShopRite, Pick and Pay, and Spar, and I'm sure lots of you feed your children Sea Harvest fish fingers. Please, when you go buy fish fingers, make sure you buy Sea Harvest and not I&J, sorry, John C. And at the same time, the other companies that are on here are global retailers. Lidl is the biggest retailer in Germany. For example, Coles is the biggest retailer in Australia. So the fact that we've got volume and we are able to beneficiate in South Africa, we are able to supply these customers across the globe. A little bit of history. We were founded in 1964 by actually the Spanish loved hake. When you go to a restaurant in Spain to eat out, you'll always have hake on the menu. They live until 84 years old in Spain on average. So I really put it down to the fact that they eat a lot of hake. At least that's the sales pitch that I use when I'm traveling to Southern Europe. We were then acquired when Pescanova left in the early 90s. We were acquired by Tiger Brands. You would know them, a big food conglomerate. And in 1998, our black shareholders, Brimstone, founded on the Cape Flats, invested in Sea Harvest. And in 2009, Brimstone with Cahiso Investments acquired the entire share of Time 15. We created our employee share trust, where at the time around 10% went to employees of the company. And then we had so much debt because we bought the company from Tiger Brands that in 2017, we listed the company on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange to try and breathe a little bit, because it's very difficult to operate a fishing business when you have a lot of debt and interest to pay. And about 2 years ago, we did one of the larger acquisitions in the fishing space, acquiring Viking Fishing. I just want to just bring this to everyone's attention, Chair, in terms of how capital intensive this industry is. I've just given you the two parts of the business. The one is running a fleet, very similar, Chair, to an airline industry. Our value of our fleet is over $1 billion. We spend around R1 billion to keep our vessels at sea, on fuel, on wages. And we spend about $140 million on capital just to do the work that you see in the second picture. Every 2 years, a vessel needs to be taken out of the water and she's got to be redone, complete fleet make. The same issue on factories. Our factories are worth $1.8 billion, very capital intensive. And we spend about R100 million a year just to keep the lights on in our factories. And like my colleague that you saw from Oceania, you know, with all the difficulties we've had with water in South Africa, particularly in the Western Cape, we've had to put our own desalination plants. We've had to arrange our own plan for power. And our operating costs for a normal factory, for our factories, is about R410 million a year. And that's just to keep the lights on. At the same time, you still have to catch fish. You still have to put it into stock. And you wait for a long time to get money from your customers. So we also have to invest R400 million in working capital on an annual basis just to keep the lights on. So as I say, it's a very capital intensive industry. It's on the extreme right when you're looking at fishing, between artisanal or small scale fishing to industrial fishing. Our operations, we have 1,800 employees in Saldanha Bay, about another 10 Castle Bay. And we pay R711 million a year on wages. We spend R38 million a year on upskilling our staff. Our staff own over 6% of our company, which is worth in today's terms around R250 million. And we've paid to our staff in dividends and capital in the last 3 years, R230 million. And I think our view has always been as a company that the most broad-based you can be as a company in terms of any type of scorecard is really making sure you share the wealth of your company with your employees. It's something that we feel very strongly about. This is probably the most important slide that I'll fresh. But if you do what my previous colleague has shown and what I'm saying here, to be vertically integrated, in other words, you catch it, you process it, you send it to another factory to process it, and you produce the final product for the final customer. That is how you create more jobs at 10. And we're proud at Sea Harvest that we're at 70. We're above the average of the industry. 84% of our product that we catch is value added. And of that, 66% is exported, because obviously
taking 400 million in revenue. So it overnight, we went into a loss-making situation, leading to Tiger selling us to Brimstone. We jumped up to 77%. And today, we are 83% Black-owned. We were voted the second most transformed company on the JSE 2 years ago. But transformation is not only about shareholding. I think, importantly, it's your staff. Most of you will believe that that our industry is made up only on with males going to sea, but that is not true. 62% of our staff are males, mainly at sea, and 38% are females, mainly working in our factories. As you'll know, the economic active population requires you to submit to the Department of Labor. It's called the EAP. They define our race groups in South Africa as African, Black, Colored, Indian, and White. In our company, ACI, or African, Colored, and Indian, make up 96% of our employees. But I think the more important thing is that what are they doing at different levels? You can clearly see that from an unskilled perspective, 98% of our staff are ACI, which I think is probably common in most companies in South Africa. But we're very proud of the right chart, that 85% of our management are from African, Black, Colored, and Indian communities, and critical in terms of, you know, the development of our country going forward. My previous colleague made this point, but I'd like to make this even more. There's a perception that, you know, that for one to create SMMEs, you need to create SMMEs on the harvesting side. But one needs to look at what strong companies do across the value chain. So, for example, we spend 1.7 billion annually on suppliers. 850 million of that is with Black-owned suppliers. And of that, 340 million is on SMMEs. We currently support 427 SMMEs. There is no way anybody can create that amount of SMMEs on the harvesting side. And that is the problem that you have with any policy decisions that go wrong, is that you kill all these people across the supply chain, because these SMMEs, some of them are 100% of the income depend on companies like Sea Harvest or I&J or Oceana or the other companies, strong big companies. And as my colleague showed, it would be in engineering, it would be in food, it would be in transport. It's across all levels of the value chain. We're also very important to Saldanha Bay. We did a socioeconomic impact study with the University of Cape Town. They said Sea Harvest was a national asset for that area. We are by far the biggest employer in the area. We employ 30% of the town, 5,700 direct and indirect jobs. And effectively, we're the biggest customer of the municipality there. We contribute over half a billion rand to the municipality on an annual basis. I'm not going to go into this in a lot of detail, Chair, because my colleagues have done that in terms of COVID-19. Most of the companies in South Africa have dealt with this. Unfortunately, we were hard hit with COVID-19 on the West Coast when it started getting into our communities. Social distancing in our communities is very, very difficult. We had a situation, Chair, at one stage that we had 189 positives in our facilities. The minister was incredibly supportive. So was the Department of Labor. I'm happy to report that we had 100% recovery rate. All our people came to work. And what it did teach us is that we need to support and make sure that, you know, you don't get this disease coming into your facilities. The most important is your screenings and having medical personnel on site and protecting the vulnerable employees, people that have got any comorbidity, people that are a little bit older. And that's the way we've managed to have 100% recovery. I don't think it's past us, Chair. I think I'm really worried about the second, Chair. People are relaxing a bit too much, definitely here in the Western Cape, and it is a concern going forward. I've seen none of our other colleagues raise any of the challenges that we face in the sector. I will touch on one or two. I'm really worried about foreign vessels in our waters. We chased them away many years ago in the late 90s. And, you know, Cape Town is right now voted the third worst port in the world in terms of unfair labor practices in fishing. Fortunately for the portfolio committee, that is not South African flagged vessels. They are foreign vessels, but unfortunately they are operating in our waters. I think we need to watch for that because it's creating a poor international image for South Africa Pty Limited. And the second big issue are our department, with all trying their best, they do have budgetary constraints. And that is a big concern to us when it comes to research. We have world-class research in the sector. I think my previous colleague showed you that we are credited by world-class sustainability, but it is coming under pressure when we have budgetary constraints like we do as a country, and we do not do the research or don't do all the trips we require because it has an impact on the way we manage resources. Finally, I've got two last slides. I think I'm okay with my time, Chair, if I'm not, just give me the heads up. I think the positives of the sector, you have a sector here that's globally competitive. This sector comes up against the US, the Russians, the Chinese, and New Zealand, and we can compete against them, particularly with the bigger companies, in terms of, you know, if they were British Airways, we are definitely Emirates. I often say that Cape Hake is the Coca-Cola of the sea. We truly punch way above our hat, and we make SA Inc. proud out there. As I've said before, our department has done a super job in the last 30 years in terms of managing Cape Hake. It was the first hake fishery on the planet to get ASC certification, which is the gold standard. And we have been recertified, and we will get recertified until 2020. And I'd like to thank the department for that, because this is the start of any fishing business. If you don't have a resource, you don't have a business. It's a very strong forex earner. 70% is exported. And importantly, all the beneficiation happens in South Africa. We create the maximum jobs in South Africa. I've explained how important the SMMEs are to the sector. And as my colleague said, we had an Empowered Deck study done for the portfolio committee. And this particular sector was voted the third most transformed sector in the South African economy, which is a big, big tick. It means that whatever government put together 15 years, if one looks at what has happened 15 years later, there's a big tick in this sector in terms of what transpires. However, the last thing is that we have a lot of anxiety with this fishing rights allocation process. You know, investors are very wary in investing in our shares, not knowing what will happen in a year's time. You know, we as shareholders, you know, are wary of how much do you invest in a company when you don't know, you know, where it will go. I think certainty, as we've seen in the mining sector, is absolutely critical for a very industrial and capital intensive sector like ours, where we're spending billions on an annual basis. It's absolutely critical. And what's great is that we are completely aligned with the NDP that the government has put out there. You know, we are behind 100% in terms of maximizing employment. We need to encourage investment in this country for us to get where we want as a country. We have to promote inclusive growth, and we have to protect our seas and sustainability. These are all the things that are in the NDP. The difficulty is, how do you know without having data and economics? Because in this sector, you have to take from Peter to give to Paul. And one needs to understand, what is the effect on Peter if you've given it to Paul? And will Paul create more jobs? And will Peter still be viable? So I think the government, and particularly the department, have got a very, very difficult job going into the fishing rights allocation process to make sure that we deliver on the government priorities that we have right now, especially when this industry has been absolutely battered with COVID-19, not only our industry, let's be honest, our country too. That's it from my side, Chair. Thank you for giving us this time. I think it was an important time for us to present to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll ask questions at the end. I think we are getting towards the end. What is the next...
African
Pioneer Group.
Yes. Chairperson, thank you very much for getting this opportunity. I am Stephen Dondolo, and I'm based in the Eastern Cape. I'm the group CEO, and we take this opportunity to present our company. You will see that our company, we have chosen only 8 slides to present. And the introduction of our company, it was formed in 1990, and it's years from the dusty roads of the township, and we have been reinvesting to build a solid company. As it is said in my slide, that the company has been in growth phase. We have chosen Chairperson, our head office, to be in the Eastern Cape because we are the Eastern Cape base, and we also believe that the Eastern Cape has got opportunities. And we also believe that there is a lot of activities that needs to happen in the Eastern Cape to develop the economy of the Eastern Cape. I must also say, Chair, that I confirm with my colleagues that is a very capital intensive business that we're involved in. As such, it has taken us a long, long time because we have a clear vision. Our vision is to build an investment company which is sustainable, which is going to grow, and it must be black-owned for the rest of its time. Within our ownership, Chairperson, as a company, we have already 3% is owned by the trust that is more for development of the areas. And we have in our fishing companies 10% that is owned by the staff, and we have been in this business now for more than 20 years. But our shareholding has been very small, and we have been gradually buying ourselves in, creating debt, because for this business to thrive, you really need to have like income to service your debt, as it was said before. 60% of our board, which is 100% black, is female. All female that are there and are all black as African. In the fishing industry, we are focusing in three species. We are in pelagic, where we have a factory in the West Coast. I'll talk about it. And we are having a hake, and the hake is based here in Port Elizabeth. And in the hake, we have less than even 3% of the total allowable cash. But the bulk of the hake is caught in the Port Elizabeth area. We also recently invested in the abalone factory, which is in Paramanus. I must say, Chairperson, if I still go through my transformation, and I want to dwell on the transformation a little bit of what, if you can bring the screen back, on what we are doing on the transformational side. I said we are 100% black owned, and we are 100%. We are level one contributor, and we have been like that since our inception. And I also mentioned that we are a broad-based company where it has got 3% of our profit goes to a trust, which NGO that looks at developing this disadvantaged people in the area of the Eastern Cape. African Pioneer went further and a foundation trust. This foundation trust collects all the contributions for the CSI and SED. We proud ourselves by have trained so many people. We've got electricians that we trained and are qualified plumbers, welders, and we also contribute all the time to the SMEs and in a sport environment. Our procurement Chairperson is 60, minimum of 60% procuring from the small, medium companies. Next slide. And in our economy, Chair, if we look at where we are positioned, the company itself is positioned in the Eastern Cape because we see Eastern Cape has not been developing a lot. And it must also be noted, Eastern Cape, when you talk about fishing companies that are in the Eastern Cape, a year or two is the only fishing company that is employing more than 300 people in the area. And with that 300 people that we employ, a year two has got vessels. We have several vessels in our fleet. Getting that are helping us. We buy some of the quotas to try and keep surviving. We've got a vessel called Zolani, which catch pilchard in the Eastern Cape. It has got about 680 tons, and it has got a capacity of 2,000 tons to catch. Chairperson, high level. I'm not going to dwell a lot. I will then go to show the pictures of our investment. The factory in the year two is a factory that employs based in the harbor here in the Eastern Cape, employs 300 people, has got a capacity to employ about 1,000, and we're looking forward in getting into that level. And the staff complement of AA2, as I said, I'm jumping from one place to another, Chair. And the next slide is our hay factory. The inside of offloading. And AA2 itself has got a huge growth opportunity, Chairperson. If only it can be receiving some additional quotas so that it can increase the employment. Unfortunately, we're running out of quotas. Like now, most of our vessels are on the shore, in shore without quotas. And what Tatiana have said. On the 98%, only maybe 2 or 3% of the fish is available in the West Coast. And if you are focusing only on one side of it, you have to import 98% of our fish. And we have been importing 98% of our fish. You can imagine how you operate a factory during the COVID, during the time where I did not want to take a lot of time and do a huge presentation, and I felt I must just take a high level. We are one of the black-owned, 100% black-owned companies, South African, not mixed, and is one of those that everybody in South Africa would love. South African industrialists are growing, and we position ourselves in doing that. And we are situated in the Eastern Cape, where the bulk of the hake is caught, and we are wanting to be one of the drivers of the economy going forward. We support our foundation. I'm proud that we have already more than 5 new entrants that will help into getting into fisheries. In return, they are also helping us by offloading the fish in a year or two so that we can be able to grow the economy. The hake is available source and resource in our area, Chair. Would love to see this sector growing, and would love to see the Eastern Cape also benefiting without really being negative. You saw most of the factors in the Western Cape, and those are the factors that are really growing and contributing to employment of the Western Cape, that are growing the Western Cape. We want in the Eastern Cape to the economy and the investment that everybody has done. Would love to have a fair contribution. And it's a pity that we are not facing you, we are not safe. And I must then close my presentation by saying if there is any question, I'm available to take the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will ask questions at the end. We must be coming towards the end now. The last presentation, Secretary, who is the last presenter?
We were supposed to have the West Point, but they have not joined the meeting.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
We'll meet them next time.
Next time, Chair.
Okay. Otherwise, thank you very much for all the presentations. And the purpose of the meeting was to introduce yourselves to the portfolio committee. And I think we have done that. Even if we are raising concerns about receiving presentations late
at least to some point we'll have your presentation. Something that will talk about the various companies, and we'll find time to go through that. But I know that members would love to ask questions, raise that or that, so that at least there's some conversation. Now, this is your opportunity, honorable members. The companies have introduced themselves. I will take hands. Honorable Lorimer, you are number one.
Thank you.
Honorable Winsler, I'm hand on the virtual hand.
Yeah, Honorable Winsler.
On the business, a cut in fishing rights allocations will be decided in the upcoming FRAP. Could we hear from some of the other companies whether they agree about the effects of quota cuts? Are they survivable? And how much could they afford to lose? Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Winkler.
The chairperson, and a thank you to the companies that presented today. I'd like to ask a more global question. Considering that by 2050, scientists have predicted that our world's fishing stocks will collapse, what is the anticipated plan or model that companies are envisaging in lieu of this catastrophe, basically. Then with regard, how are you seeking to offset your carbon footprint? Because marine vessels do contribute quite significantly to CO2 emissions. So are you investing in... I think one company has said that they were investing in solar PV. I just like to hear what the other companies are perhaps doing. Then with regard to bycatch, I'd like to know, do you keep record of how much bycatch you have in your industries? And are you looking at technology to improve your bycatch levels so that we aren't inadvertently, killing certain marine species? Then I'd also like to know, what investment are companies making in terms of protecting our marine species and to ensure that large portions of our ocean remain intact so that they can be sustainable in the long run? So there are a number of marine protected areas that are severely under-resourced, and perhaps corporates could come in to try and assist government to maintaining these areas and the vital fish stocks and nurseries that they hold, as well as numerous plastic pollution in our oceans. I think that since the model relies on you taking from our oceans, what are you doing to give back? Basically. And then, I think that's all for now. Yeah. Oh, as one company had, sorry, Chairperson, one company had mentioned that there was issues with the port in Cape Town, labor issues. If they could just elaborate on that a bit, please. Thank you.
Honorable Paulson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. Chairperson, I would like to know from the companies that have presented, of the how much of that comes from new entrants who have received quotas and do not have the resources to go and harvest the allocation and then sell it to these bigger fishing companies? How much of the total quota that they catch comes from those quota holders? That's the one thing. And also, other than getting the quotas from those quota holders, do those quota holders also work for those companies? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Singh.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I hope I can remain for the answers to the questions. But firstly, I want to thank you, Chairperson, for the leadership and the initiative in inviting all these companies along to make the presentation. I think it's, for me, this is really not a fishy business. It's much larger than a fishy business. I mean, we've had all the big fishing people here, but I want to emphasize the point that once we take care of the big and we recognize the contribution they are making to the economy, to job creation, to SMEs, we've got to also worry about the small fish. So we've got to look at this quite holistically, Chairperson. With regards to maybe generally all of them can tell us about this 98% importing of pilchards. I mean, it's a matter of concern. Is it that we don't have this type of fish in our oceans, or what is the reason? Because it takes me to my next concern and question is, how are all these companies going to contribute to ensuring that we stop foreign trawlers coming into our oceans and poaching our fish sources? Because I don't think it should be just the responsibility of DEA and our blue scorpions, but a joint. Is there any kind of joint initiative that all these companies can come together to stop poaching of abalone and other fish sources? Chairperson, I also feel that it is good to hear that the beneficiation aspect is as good as it is, and I hope the mining industry can take a leaf out of this book here, because most of our mineral resources go abroad and then get beneficiated and come back here and get sold. Another question I'd like to ask, Chairperson, is in these companies, maybe they can't give us the answer now, how many forestry and fisheries employees are in their companies, whether they came from agriculture, forestries, or whether this company here that are leaders in these companies. But we'd like to, perhaps when we have a next interaction, to know whether there were any allocations, any policies that were geared towards favoring some of these companies moving along. Because the last thing I want to talk about is the fishing rights allocation process. I think that's something which we've got another meeting coming up and we've got to look at very, very carefully, because these are very capital intensive businesses and we can't give them short term rights, especially the ones that are investing at mercy. And I think, Chair, I say this tongue in cheek, because Mr. Stephen Dondolo, if you see him anywhere else from African Pioneer Group, you'd think he's our minister. He looks exactly like the minister. So, but he made an excellent presentation. We want to see his company grow. And I think it's our responsibility as political office bearers to work with the department and see how this industry can contribute more to the local economy, to export and to job creation in our own country. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Modise.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think let's take this opportunity to welcome the presentations from the big fish themselves. As time goes on, I'm sure we'd like to interface with the small fish, not the small fishermen and the big fishermen, but the small fish and the big fish. but I'm sure they would like them did, but I think as political officers would like to know what is the contribution of these companies into in terms of job.
Honorable Modisa.
That's my observation. But firstly, you know, when these are the big companies, and they must know that when they come to the meeting, they must send a presentation before. And the other thing, let's not use the abbreviations. I don't know what is FREP. I'm coming from Gauteng, so there's no C here. I don't know what is FREP. So it confuses. You don't follow properly because I see most of them, they were talking about FREP. I don't know what is it. And then there's this issue of the foreign vessels, foreign fishing. How best can they assist in this issue? Because they need also to meet the government so that they assist each other, both them and the department. How best can, so I'm asking them how best can they do it, and there's an issue that was raised that there's a study that is being done that was done for the PC. I just want. I believe that it wasn't done by any of them, because that study will be biased. It must be done by an independent person. We usually go out and use the universities to assist us. So if it was done by them, to me it's not a first study, because they will look at protecting themselves so that they reach whatever goal they want to reach. I'm not saying it's like that. I'm saying it will lead to that. The other thing I see, the small fishing businesses. How do they assist them? Those who want to still start a business so that they their fishing rights and get the mentor. Are they doing this? And how many do they take per year? And I have seen also, when you look at the females, there's one, I think it's there's one which it says it's got 38 females, but at least he mentioned that 38 females. But 38 females is still very little. We are too many as women. And so the other thing that is important is the total number of young people, because once you you transfer skills and everything to the younger generation, you know that there'll be more people dealing with that project. So I don't see here because even those 38 females, they are down there. They are not in management. So we want to see the female and the young people, including the disabled, in all levels. Let it be fair. Thank you.
And you, Honorable Modise, are you back or you're still not connected? Honorable Modise. Okay, I will allow him if we still have time. I am not sure. Hello.
It's Kancho.
Honorable Kancho.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, colleagues. Let me also. How much have they contributed? And when we talk about transformation, what are they talking about? Can they also be detailed? Because other companies have given us percentages and figures. So I just wanted to raise that, Chair. Thank you.
Now, I was saying, I am not sure how the companies would come in. Maybe each one will just deal with whatever issues they want to deal with. We don't have much time. Can we...
except the one that posted.
I and J, and then we'll see as we proceed. I think you'll come in. Pardon me, I'm also not able to see your hands in the system. So I don't take exception if you raise your voice. I'll take you.
Mr. Yeah, I'm ready, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think question one, just to go back to the question from Mr. Lorimer, was related to quota cuts and the impact of quota cuts on some of the other companies. Just to expand a bit on that, the industry had a study completed by Genesis Analytics, a well-known economics advisory group. And the leader of that, or the actual person who put that study together, is now working for the government, so reasonably credible. The economic modeling that was done was a comprehensive socioeconomic impact assessment across the Hague deep sea trawl sector, and they modeled the impact of quota gains and quota losses across the various businesses and or sector. So to answer the question specifically, a 10% cut in the TAC was modeled by Genesis to have a fundamental impact on any one of the major companies destroying or removing a quota, which then obviously had a cascading effect on the jobs and then the deleveraging effect on the businesses that we operate in terms of the vessels that would then be required, the factories that then won't be required, et cetera, et cetera. So you'd be chopping out, it's very difficult to chop half a factory or quarter of a factory or half a vessel. So that was really the gist of it. What they did say was would be useful was that if there was going to be any quota that was going to be taken away, if it was going to be taken away from some of the larger businesses in the sector who have the ability to upscale. So that report, we welcome sharing that report with you, Honourable Chair, and your members. Nation. And then in relation to transformation and employment, it's difficult to maybe run through all of the detail, but there is on slash Irvin and Johnson is a level one triple B contributor. So we've met, I guess, all of the tests and the hurdles and the measures that are required. And that's on the most recent set of BE rules. In terms of the numbers of employees, I think that's on slide six. It's just over 2,000. Sometimes it's up to 2,200 people, depending on the season. And there are other numbers in that, Mr. Chair.
Next.
The next one, Chair, is quite technical questions. There were actually five. So I can take them, Chair, because I sit on a lot of the environmental committee. I'm Felix from Sea Harbor.
Okay.
Chair, the first question is actually a very good question in terms of, you know, that the member asked is that, are we concerned about 2050 and everything, you know, that has been said about wild fishing stocks? It's the most important question here, Chair, because it doesn't matter who owns quotas. There's no fish in the sea. There's nothing you can do with it. So that is what we spend most of our time on. You'll appreciate we would never invest R1 billion on vessels if we didn't think that the resource would be there in the next 25 years. It would be quite silly investments. So we are actually working with global organizations, the University of Washington, supporting them in terms of trying to understand, you know, how we can protect world fishing stocks. I'm very happy to say from a whitefish sector, which is where hake plays, we are currently at 7.1 million tons, which is the highest that it's been since 1982. So it does seem that with all the headaches of global warming, the way resources are managed by countries is showing that stocks are recovering globally on whitefish, which is the bottom feeders, and looking quite positive for the sector. The second question was around the carbon footprint, and here is a very big positive in our sector. Fishing activities, wild caught fishing, is the lowest carbon footprint of the proteins that we know, whether it be beef or chicken. Even though we are operating trawlers, it's still the lowest carbon footprint of all of them. When we do measure them, you can go to Oceana's integrated report, you can go to ours, we publicly listed companies, that's measured and you can see it. But that's not to say that we're not doing more. As I've said, we've done desalination plants, we've put up wind turbines on some of our areas because we do understand that global warming is an issue, but we're happy to say that from a food protein, we're the lowest. The third question was around bycatch. And again, this, you know, we are on the RFA, the Responsible Fisheries Alliance, which we formed with WWF. You'll know WWF in the world in terms of managing resources. And we, to just a project we did, we measured bird kills when we actually up trawl with fishing. And there were 30,000 birds that were historically dying when we would go fishing for hake. We reduced that to less than 300 in a year with the initiative that we did with WWF. On bycatch, however, it's very, very low in our fishery because of the type of net meshes we use. Less than 10% of activity in hake is bycatch. And the reason is because, you know, you wouldn't even if it was there, you wouldn't want to bring it up because you're spending fuel to catch something that is of low value. So it's in the interest of companies to limit the bycatch. I think the other one was the investment to protect the marine species. So what we've done as an industry is to say we have ring-fenced our fishing grounds. So what we've said as an industry is that we will not go out of grounds that we previously fished. We will not go into new grounds and develop new fishing grounds. And at its part, we work with the department and put that as a permit condition. That in a hake fishery, we would only fish in those areas that had been fished, not in areas that weren't fished. We only trawl, just for everybody's information, we only trawl 4% of the South African EEZ. So we are the least biggest problem. Unfortunately, we don't make as much money as everybody that's looking for fuels and gas. And the bigger issue we have is with our cousins out there that are looking for much more expensive resources and unsettling the benthic that is out there. I think I've covered most of the questions that the member had asked, which were all really environmentally based. So I'll hand over to you, Chair.
Thank you.
I think I sit in a unique position in this group of companies that I'm the only SMME, as I mentioned earlier. So my take on the question of cuts is completely different. In the sector that's been mentioned the most, like deep sea trawl, you have one company represented here sitting with 43% of the TAC. Then you've got another company sitting with 30% of the TAC. I sit with 0.01% of the TAC. So for me, the value, as Mr. Ateb said earlier, sits in the value chain. And with 0.01% of the TAC, I can't bind to the value chain. The exit vessel, should I get 6,000 tons, I could employ 60 people and potentially build a factory employing 300 people. So we need to look beyond what is there already and look at what is possible in the SMME sector. And again, if SMMEs are empowered with viable quotas, we could approach the existing companies and say, let us buy into your infrastructure. So there's no need to then close down your factories, but allow us to, companies are doing it, but most of them are not, and that should be addressed. So it's not just an easy question of cuts. It's actually viability and whether it's worthwhile. And again, I want to reiterate my point that I made right in the beginning. An SMME in fishing is different from an SMME anywhere else because government determines the size of my business. I can't sit on 165 tons of fish and another company sits on 53,000 tons of fish. You can't compare me. And I'm just asking there for to be a fair assessment of the fishing industry, and there needs to be redistribution because it's broad based black economic empowerment. There needs to be some level of sharing. Just another thing, a comment was made on the economic study. As an SMME in the sector, I have publicly distanced myself from the study because it does not take into account the price of SMMEs in the deep sea trawl sector. Honourable Winkler, I'm proud to say that Sound Props and the grouping we attach to in Saldanha, because we are a Saldanha-based company, in the small pelagic sector, we're busy building two new vessels. And, I mean, as you know, anything that's being built now is up to eco standards. We belong to the industry associations in the sector, and we need to acknowledge that South Africa's fishing industry is one of the best managed industries in the world, and we need to give recognition to the department for that. So through the South African Pelagic Fishing Industry Association and through the Longline Association, we have ongoing engagement with the department around environmental issues. Honorable Paul, sir. I don't think I could really honestly answer your question, but I think that from Sound Props even being an SMME, our vessels have other SMMEs that are busy pulling to and assist them with their rights applications. Honorable Singh, the issue of the 98% filtered imports, the issue is biological at this point. And there's lots of, there's not much we can say about that. So we can't blame the foreign trawlers for that, unfortunately, for that specific occurrence. And I guess the question was brought up. I used to work for the department, and I resigned in 2005. I've been operating independently in the fishing industry since 2006. And the shareholding I hold now, I bought in 2018. So it wasn't allocated to me. I actually bought it. If you do want details of the transactions, I'm happy to make that available.
Can we also answer a few questions, Shamira, on particular ones for our companies? It was one about how many females are in the sector.
Can I answer, please, because this is my opportunity. Thank you. Honorable Madise, you didn't get to finish your question on SMMEs, because as you can hear, I'm quite passionate about SMMEs. Honorable Mbata, FRAP is the fishing rights allocation process. And again, as an SMME, government constantly asks big business, what are you doing to assist SMMEs? As an SMME, I'm asking government now to assist me and other fellow SMEs getting rights allocation and give me viable quotas so that I can build a viable business. As I indicated earlier, we are majority black female owned and majority black female managed. And then I saw Honorable Disa posted a question in the chat. We are based in Saldanha, and I'm extending an invitation to all the honorable members to come see our operations and our vessels and see what we've done with the little quotas that we have. Thank you.
Can we ask Mr. Dondolo? I see Honorable Winkler will come to you. Let's ask Mr. Dondolo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to have a contribution on the small and medium-sized companies and also take into account a year two as a factory that employs 300 people, but that survive on the small and the small quota holders that are linked to our vessel. That was the question. Any help that you are doing in helping small quota holders? Our survival right now, which I don't think it's sustainable, because we are buying those quotas from those people. And also no one from the people that are bringing quotas to us is working in our factory, because we are already employing people, and we also on the vessel have people that are employed. Ours is, for us to be sustainable, it will be more if if the department can consider the Eastern Cape as a needy area when it comes to cake allocation, so that we can build our own industry. The industry concentration must also spread. That is what I wanted to do. We do have small quota holders in the Eastern Cape that we are asking them to come along. As far as the pilchard is concerned, I also mentioned the 98% that we are importing. Honestly, it is an environmental issue. The fish has just disappeared. We're doing it purely for us to be able to sustain ourselves until the fish comes back, because we act as an agricultural business where it is being affected by the environment on a regular basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other company before I take the hands of members who want to make follow-up?
Chairperson, this is Imran from Oceana. May
yes,
I come?
Please. Come in, yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to comment and to build on the comments around the resources and decline in ocean resources, I think you'll find to the question from the Honourable Member that where resources have been managed sustainably and responsibly by governments in the last 15 years, those fishing resources are not in decline. They've actually been fairly consistent. The resources that are declining, and there are many, let's be honest about it, those are irresponsibly managed. They have no regulation around harvesting, and in particular, harvesting from illegal fisheries is significant in those resources that are declining. What was very interesting for us is that in the recent submission, on the updated submission to Project Pakisa that came from the fisheries sector, the South African scientific community actually alluded to the fact, and Shamira made this point, is that we have, in most species, a very well-managed resource, and credit to the Department of Fisheries for their role in securing that, or for their role in ensuring it. But for many of these resources, if we continue to responsibly manage them and have good oversight, good policy, good regulation, then we can expect over the next, up to a rate of around 10% over the next two decades, which is very promising for us, which also talks to the fact that with the right policy, one can increase jobs in what is traditionally a very static space. The question around pilchard supply, I think, is misunderstood. It is not because the resource is mismanaged. South African consumption of pilchards has grown significantly over the last 20 years, and there have never been that level of pilchard supply in our local waters to satisfy consumers' needs. And therefore, companies like ourselves, like Stephen Dondolos, have had to go elsewhere to secure fish simply to feed the consumer needs in South Africa. So this is part and parcel of what we do. We are going through a cyclical low, and our information from the scientific community is that this will restore over time, given that there's strong management from the Department of Fisheries in particular. I guess to the question around quota cuts and whether they're survivable or not, as the honorable members can see, I guess it depends on which side of the equation one sits, and therefore there's a high level of subjectivity on this matter, as there always will be. We're therefore very supportive of the fact that government has engaged on a economic impact assessment as briefed by the Ministry and the Department of Treasury and the Office of the Presidency a few weeks ago. And as indicated by the other honorable members, this will be an independent study which will independently verify whether quota cuts are sustainable or not, and hopefully by a deep analysis of each sector. The capital intensivity of each of the sectors has a major impact on whether or not quota cuts are sustainable. I'm also supportive of some of the other comments earlier that if you're going to be taking from Peter to pay Paul, then at the bare minimum, Paul needs to be an existing player in the sector. And policy also then, to my mind, needs to ensure that Peter and Paul then engage each other to ensure survivability. So in my opinion, it makes no sense to take quota from a current rights holder and give quota to a new rights holder if you don't enable that new rights holder to survive. So whether it's providing skill, whether it's providing access to assets, whether it's providing access to markets or participation in your business or even funding, what is also clear that the banks won't fund you if you've got a quota. So whether you've got 100 tons or 10,000 tons or 100,000 tons, that on its own will not be sufficient for funding from traditional lending institutions. So I guess my view on cuts and sustainability is that, again, to my point in my presentation, I believe that there's a path that can be walked with here together to ensure that existing rights holders and current SMEs and small-scale fishermen can coexist. And I believe that we're headed towards a policy that will help define this on a sustainable basis into the future. Thank you, Chair. That's my contribution.
Thank you. I can see Honorable Winkler and Honorable Gancho. You will follow in that order. Honorable Mbata. But before that, Honorable Modis, I saw him. I don't know if he wanted to complete what he was asking.
Chairman, maybe you must proceed. I think my network is highly unstable. I'm trying to get a proper location, and then I will get back to you.
Okay. Honorable Winkler.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the various presenters for their responses. I think Sea Harvest at least attempted to give a very good response, but Oceana and INJ, I would like to know, with regards to those questions, what is your model going to be if, in all eventuality, fish stocks collapse in 2050? We don't obviously operate in isolation of the rest of the world. So obviously sustainable management of fish stocks by other governments speaks to whether or not we have sustainable fish reserves here and whether or not we can then carry through these existing models and jobs. Now, as I said, what happens in worst case scenario if we are unable to sustain our existing fishing quotas into 2050? What happens to those jobs? What happens to those communities? What happens to those people? What are you anticipating? Then I'd like to know, how much are your companies contributing to marine preservation and protection? Since, as I said, you are using resources that come from the ocean, and it's only right that you are giving back and assisting government to protect our marine resources and to ensure that they are there for future generations. I think another one of my colleagues has spoken to this, and that is about the fact that there's a large contingent of subsistence fishers that exist in KwaZulu-Natal and possibly in other provinces that really lack assistance when it's access to capital or assets or markets, and how the industry can collaborate with government to assist these fishing, generational fishing communities who are solely dependent on coastal fish stocks and access to fish to survive. Thank you.
Honorable Gancho.
Chairperson, just one question from...
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Singh. I have one last question to Sea Harvest. Given the capital intensive requirements in the sector, do you think that opening up of the sector to new entrants will lead to market competition and reduction of capital requirements for market entry? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say, let me comment on the study to say that study, I don't think the companies must identify the person who's going to do the research for them. Rather, I would advise them to fund the department so that the department can get a person or a university to conduct the study. Because even if the study, they are saying that it's not going to be biased, but it's coming from them. To me, it's a problem. To me, I'm a researcher. To me, it's a problem. Somewhere, somehow, you will manipulate the results. Leave it to the department. If you want to do justice, fund the department like they are doing with all the researchers. There's a research department or unit in the department. Allow them to run it and lead you. You assist them with the resources. That's how fair we work. And then the other thing, I don't get answers from other people. I've asked about the small fishing business, on how you mentor them and everything in order to get the fishing rights. And I asked how many per year, I put it per year, 12 months, how many do you assist? To say, we assist so much every year. I didn't know that there was an SMME, and SMME cannot answer the question that I directed to the big company. And then the other thing, I'm worried about the environmental management and protection. What happened to that? Because the NIMA Act says, at the end, you must correct. You must rehabilitate and do everything and protect the community, whoever lives next to that area. Even the Constitution says so. Protect them. You don't tell us about that. We need to know, because we are dealing with environmental management and fisheries and so forth. Let us know what is happening. Don't hide things. Because the first thing what I've noticed, once a person doesn't give you information on time, he wants to make you not to know what is happening, because he's hiding that information. You can't, I mean, myself, I didn't go through the information correctly. And up to my satisfaction. So please answer the question so that we understand. We are here to assist each other. And our main issue, because you are the big company, you're supposed to assist us and the department or the government to say, how do we build the small ones? Because we need to have a future business people. I asked about the women. I asked about the younger generation. I'm not getting the answer. Let's assist each other. I also need to know about how do you work with and assist the township economy. How do them? Because your townships, even where you are, you've got townships. And I've got a problem. In most cases, you find that most of the work it's in one area, but when you go to other areas, KwaZulu Natal and so forth, I think it's Sing Ohana, somebody wrote it, and it happened, and it's been happening not only last year, even in agriculture, it's the same. Please let's correct them. And then the other thing is that I think we want, I'm asking about the SMEs, because we once had the most of the issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman. And very quickly, what I'd like to know, maybe from the department can answer this at some stage, what is on the marine protected areas that we have? And I say so because in some marine protected areas, you can't go and catch one fish from the land, from the seashore. one or two fish and then you get into trouble. So I just like to know generally what's the regulations. And lastly, Chair, may I suggest, if it hasn't been suggested, that we should reserve our right to ask further questions of these companies once we go through all the presentations in detail, because we had those challenge questions to them before we comprehensively discuss the whole fishing industry and Electra.
Thank you. We are rounding up now because of time. I'll allow the companies to respond. Maybe we must take you. Let's start with Oceana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll respond to some questions and obviously the opportunity to respond detailed as Honorable Singh has requested, and we would be more than happy to engage on that basis. To the question around environmental management, doesn't act in isolation, that you'll find that most of the companies in commercial fisheries in Africa operate together in conjunction with the department. INJ and Sea Harvest are founding members of the Responsible Fishing Alliance, which is worked together with the WWF and BirdLife South Africa to adopt and deploy good fishing practices, particularly from our vessels, and those are funded by ourselves. And we all participate in global responsible fishing practices and engage with scientific communities all over the world. So I would imagine in coming here that as much as you see the responses as separate, you know, we are all harvesters of the same resource, and the responsible management of that resource is the responsibility of all, and we work quite closely with government in this regard. As for the question around funding, you will find that from time to time, government, through the various industry associations, has approached the Pelagic Fishing Association, as opposed to SATSTIA, to fund its research vessels in particular when funding has been shared. And I think you'll find that government will respond and confirm that we were able to assist in those areas. From a Shiana point of view, we also asked about what we're spending in terms of responsible scientific management. Ms. Daniels, the chairperson of the Lobster Association, we have presented to the department a lobster traceability project, and we are key funders to that project. On the question of small-scale fishing and what we're doing, I can confirm that from an academy point of view, which I spoke to earlier, we have dedicated an amount of around 3.5 to 4 million rand every year, which will be for the training of around 500 to 550 small-scale fishermen every year, to the point of not just training them on fishing skills. We're teaching life skills, we're teaching practical skills and how to open a bank account, how to manage your finances, how to survive at sea. And this is done in conjunction with the Department of Forestry and Fisheries, helping in particularly the fishing co-ops gain the relevant experience that they need, thereby enabling them to become more commercially productive. Last question around what happens in 2050. I mean, that's the ultimate question for a fishing company that operates purely in the harvesting space. One, it has to firstly depend on good regulation. As I said, it's about partnership with the appropriate partners operating in the world. But we obviously also operate under the proviso that fishing stocks could decline by virtue of weather events, by virtue of unforeseen that we don't have control over. And so you'll find that most companies in the space would look to diversify. I know that some are ahead of others in that space, in that over time, fish protein companies would look to diversify their supply from resources harvested from the ocean, resources farmed, so from looking to aquaculture as opposed to wild capture. And most fishing companies globally are making a steady trend towards wild, farming and away from wild capture, to ensure sustainability, not just of job security, but of food security, because fish protein is a critical component of human consumption. Chair, I think most of it, as to the specific questions around our scorecard and I think leadership in our business. But again, we're more than happy to submit a written report to the question. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Chair, should I have a turn? It's John T. Yankovic from Evan and Johnson, just to respond to those questions. Are you happy for me to respond? I'll take that as a yes, and really just look to echo largely what my colleagues have said, but to give an INJ flavour. I think to Honourable Winkler's questions, I guess there are two there, the 2050 question around if there are no fish stocks, we can't get there and we shouldn't get there. I'm pretty confident that we will never get there. Generally, the science that's being used and adopted by the department, the scientists in the department, and the scientists that they use outside of the department, the level of mathematics and modeling that's been applied, and the rules and the governance that they then apply to us as fishing companies, I'm very comfortable that, and I'm putting my hand on my heart when I tell my friends and family this, that the fishing stocks in South Africa are very, very, very well managed. We have, I think you raised a specific question around marine protected areas. Recently, I think there were additional 20 marine protected areas that were promulgated. Those are set in stone. We as fishing companies are monitored and are restricted from entering or fishing in those areas. Obviously, we can sail across them, but we're not allowed to fish in them. And that's very carefully managed, and we're comfortable in the management of those areas. Again, just sticking with Honourable Winkler's questions, local fishermen support. I think I made mention of a specific example of our abalone, where we have local businesses who fish or harvest kelp. That's a good example of a small fishing business. I think Honourable Mbata also asked a question around us supporting or business, big business supporting some of the smaller fishing businesses. We support, as I said in the notes, 460 small businesses, but more specifically, 21 of those are specific fishing businesses. Some of them we've had relationships for 20 years, and we support them in various ways and means. What I suggest we do is we send you the specifics of how we do that, and they obviously range from supporting those businesses from operational requirements, maintenance requirements, marketing requirements. It all depends. It depends on the business. But you know, that's something that obviously we do, and we're very proud, and we feel it's important to do. So that's what we do in that regard. In terms of the study, Honourable Mbata, we agree it should absolutely be independent. It shouldn't be industry-led. All we ask for is that it's deep and it's fact-based, and that it has rigor, which I trust the department will apply their minds and apply their resources to that. So we fully support that. In terms of funding the department or supporting funding the department, I think we have got good examples of doing that already, and it's really for the department to answer to those. I'm not really for us to brag about that, but we do accept the funding of the and able to do that, and we do that. Environmental protection, Mr. Ratliff's response, we are members, and myself or ourselves, INJ, Fishline of Sea Harvest, a number of our fishing companies are members of the Responsible Fishing Alliance. It's an alliance led by the WWF. It's an incredibly strict alliance. We signed a code of conduct that we will adhere to those rules, regulations, and governances that apply to that alliance. And as Felix talked about, the bird mortality reduction is one example. But of course, we have a number of other obligations, including you know, monitoring bycatch species, and that's also linked to the SASE accreditation. I'm sure you're aware of that, where the green, amber, and red species measurements. As INJ in particular and specifically, we've signed an agreement with SASE, with WWF, that we will not trade any species that are red listed. And we've had that that contract with the WWF, I think, close to 10 years now. So I think the point is that we all take environmental issues incredibly seriously. It's important for us to do that because the ocean, you know, supports our businesses and the livelihoods of our of ourselves and our employees and stakeholders. Mr. Singh, I think I might have cleared your query on the impact of marine protected areas. Those are specific. Those are ring fenced. All of our vessels have got that those ring fenced areas on their radar systems. They very much know where they are at sea. And over and above that, we monitor that from to track and monitor on a, I think it's every 30 seconds we get a ping from a vessel to know exactly where it is and how fast it's going and whether it's fishing. So we police that both at shore and at sea. And then lastly, on more information, we'd very much welcome the opportunity to bear the queries. I think it's a, this is a wonderful opportunity for us to engage with all of you, and apologies that we haven't been able to do it before, and I hope we can do it again, and hopefully face-to-face. So thank you very much from myself and from INJ.
Yes, we have run out of time. I know I wanted Premier Fishing and African Pioneer to say something. If they can take 1 minute each, would be happy. If there's any issue, of course, that requires their response.
Yes. Premier Fishing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, so Premier Fishing, I think we're a bit slightly different in terms of our colleagues, in terms of the...
Yes,
sorry? Okay, so Premier Fishing has a basket of diverse products, from lobster, squid, hake, horse mackerel, pelagic. We, our allocations in these sectors are from small to medium, so we do not have...
Yeah. It looks like you have a problem.
So I've got to repeat everything I said. Okay. Apologies for that. Okay, as I was saying, I started out by commenting on the fact that Premier Fishing has a diverse basket of products. So we've got lobster, squid, hake, horse mackerel, and pelagic. And most of the sectors we are active in, our quota is really small to medium allocations in comparison to the TAC. The only large sector that we are quite prevalent in is the South Coast rock lobster sector. So with regards to quota cuts, it will impact our business quite severely if we do get further reductions in these sectors. In terms of sustainable fishing, that is vital to our business. So we also trained all our skippers in terms of, you know, sustainable fishing and environmental impact. We also solar panels at our aquaculture farm. We're looking at implementing wind turbines as well. So we are very aware in terms of global warming and the impact our business could potentially have. So yeah, we are putting measures in place to mitigate those. With regards to rice holders, we've got a team, Trimfish, a full-on team that supports small rice holders, not just financially contributing to assisting them, also educating them on many, I think like Imran said earlier, on life aspects, just to how to manage their right as a business in itself and to be sustainable. So we're very involved in supporting, and the rights holders that we are involved with, especially on the lobster and abalone sectors. There was a question if there's any rights holders working for the companies. We do not have any rights holders working for our company. We do not have anyone from the department working within our company either. We also concur regarding the to attain the relevant research. We also support the department financially through the relevant associations that we are involved in. And we'd also welcome any further questions in writing posed to Premier Fishing outside of this forum, seeing that our time is quite limited. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, can I take this last minute? Chairperson, can I take the last minute? Can I carry on? Sure. Is the meeting still on?
Stephen, I can hear you. Felix, I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I will assume then. Sorry.
I can hear you as well, Simon.
Yeah. And any members of the parliament?
Yes, indeed. You're coming through loud and clear.
Okay. Mine, I'm going to be taking that 1 minute. I'm not going to repeat most of the things that the industry is doing. And in high level, I must say the industry, the fishing is a very responsible industry. We fish within the guidelines of the law. All what we are doing is compliant. But I must also say from the side of a year two is sitting in the Eastern Cape, and a year two is in the area where really needs support, and a year two needs job creation and so on, because most of the industry are concentrated in Cape Town, I must say, for the industry. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, members, we have lost the chairperson, but he's trying to join the meeting again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tieleka. Yes, I just want to ask, is it possible for each of the companies, the big ones especially, to submit perhaps an email to us with how much they spend on social corporate responsibility and on environmental protection and rehabilitation annually?
Okay.
If they could, I know we don't have time left, so maybe they could just send that information through to us, please.
All right. I will communicate that message to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Hello.
Yes, Chair.
I'm in now, yes. was there somebody who was still speaking? Hello?
Hello, Mr. Chair. I was requesting you to say a few words.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Yes, we can, Chair.
Now, who is on the floor? I can't see you. I'm on audio now. Actually, I wanted to round up this item. I know I was left with two people who were supposed to say something, and but the proposal of Mr. Singh or Honorable Singh to say if there are specific issues that would want to follow up on, will please do that. And otherwise, I think we have come to the end of our session now. This is going to impact on the next one. Was there anybody who wanted to say something?
Mr. Chair, I was wanting to, I'm from the Eastern Cape, and I wanted the opportunity to say a few words.
And Honorable Winkler, please, just one.
Honorable... is it Honorable Mr. Dondolo?
No.
Who wanted to say something from the Eastern Cape?
It's Rida Domain from the Eastern Cape.
Okay, say something. Yes. Just 1 minute, please.
Yes, I'll keep short. Good day. I'm Rida Domain. I'm from the Eastern Cape. I represent most of the associations, Eastern Cape Allergic Association, Ake Long Line Association, Eastern Cape and seven various national associations and seven the scientific marine management working groups, 100% SMME. Basically, there was a question asked as to why allocations are so biased to the Western Cape and why the Eastern Cape is not really featured. I would have liked to answer that, and in my opinion, there is a problem in terms of geographical allocations. We certainly feel that
we got the message, Honorable. Honorable Winkler.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to direct people to the companies and the presenters to the chat function on our call. There are questions there by Desmond Desai and other stakeholders that I think are really important and need to be addressed. So perhaps those could be submitted through a written submission by the company. But yes, I think they need to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, let me say thank you very much to all the presenters who came to present to the portfolio committee. Any issues that we want to follow up on, we'll do so. And the proposal that said we are aware that there are big companies and small companies, and we are also aware that we would want to see how all this comes together. But critically, we are a country here that is confronted by a challenge that requires us to re-energize our economy, re-energize everything after this destruction by COVID. But coming together, talking about issues, is always good, because if we don't know what is going on, it doesn't help anybody. Thank you very much for the time and the presentation. I'm sure next time would improve on some of the things that were being raised as questions here. We have come to the end of this session. We are about to start the new one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much. But we are starting another meeting. Those who are supposed to remain, please don't. There's no break. I just want to be guided now by the PC secretary. If the
department is connected and the rest of the SMM is?
Yes, Chairperson, the presentation is on. And yes. Some of the small scale officials have joined the meeting.
Have joined?
Yes.
Who are those?
Oh.
Can I ask them to introduce themselves, Chair?
Yes, that will help so that we at least have a sense of who is here.
Desmond?
Chair, good afternoon. Desmond Desart from the KZN in Dublin.
Okay.
Hi, I'm
so congratulations.
Hi,
who else is there?
I'm a small scale teacher.
Can you see the face so that you know them?
You also want to see the face. You can't see mine. Then the third one.
Good afternoon, Chair and honourable members. This is JP from KwaZulu-Natal Subsistence Fishing Forum.
Yeah.
Afternoon, everyone. This is Luanda from the African Pioneer Group.
Yes.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Tindiso from Coastal Institution.
Okay.
Hi.
Welcome.
My name is Nasir Jaffa. I'm from Massif Fundis.
Also, welcome.
Hello, I'm...
Yeah.
I'm...
Ah, it is cutting.
Come
on. It's the network.
Small scale.
Yeah. Who else? Is that all? Is that all?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. Now let me welcome all of them. And welcome the department as well. And we are already into this program. We're running out of time. So let me immediately hand over to the department to make the... In fact, let me explain to the small-scale fishermen. After our engagement with yourselves, we met with the department. This is where we were supposed to come back to you to give you feedback, but we agreed with the department to say, let them come and make a presentation in our presence, responding to the issues that were raised in that early meeting before the lockdown. And so it might be that the issues were raised because of time. We might no longer remember them. We agreed with the department to say also they will just update the report and give it to us. When I say us, we are the portfolio committee. We interacted with you and we raised some of the issues. That's the context of the meeting. The meeting is more of a feedback on the issues that were raised. Obviously, I think the department will take into account the context that now it is October. It was some time ago. Can I hand over to the department to make the presentation?
Good afternoon, Chair, honorable members, colleagues.
Chair, I'm going to, without I understand the time constraints, further ado, hand over to Ms. Sue Middleton from the Fisheries Branch to do the presentation, Chair. And yeah, basically welcoming everybody as well in terms of their inputs and basically indicating that this will be the departmental response to the inputs that were made by the small scale fishers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, Honourable Chair, Honourable members, members of the small scale fishing community, and my colleagues. I'm joined. I don't know if you want me to put my camera on or should I just speak to the presentation?
Oh, anything, as long as we see the presentation. Oh. If we hear you, why?
Thanks. Thank you very much, Chairperson. So just by way of background, well, let me first introduce my colleagues. I'm accompanied by three colleagues, Mr. Belamani Samoli, who is the Chief Director of Aquaculture and Economic Development, Mr. Fasa Piha, the Acting Chief Director for Marine Resource Management, and Mr. Angila Ngongwa, who is the Acting Director for Fisheries Management. Chair, as you know, members of the small-scale fishing community made representation to the Portfolio Committee on the 4th of June. And then members of the commercial and aquaculture sector made representation to the Portfolio Committee on the 17th of June. And on the 2nd of September this year, the fisheries branch responded to all the issues raised by the small scale inland and aquaculture. And now we've been asked to just represent what we presented on the 2nd of September. So with us, what we've done is we, although there were presentations done by Basikudise, Coastal Links, the artisanal fishers from KZN, amongst others, what we've done is we've clustered the issues. So rather than responding to each individual presentation, we've clustered the issues. And then we've the response. Four of the lockdown, and the first question was, when was the minister publishing the COVID-19 level 3 regulations? So this is obviously passed, but the minister gazetted the level 3 regulations the following day, the day after the portfolio committee meeting on the 5th of June. And the directions were circulated to all members and posted on the departmental website. The next set of issues was a request for the provisioning of PPEs to small-scale fishers, as well as distancing and lockdown regulations that need to take place to fishers who are unfortunately illiterate. And the department's response there is that we engage with various partners to support the small-scale fishing communities throughout the various through various interventions. We received a donation of 4,800 masks that were distributed to all fishing communities. and various platforms were used, not just departmental platforms, including relevant district, local, provincial, and national departments. We shared the information with fishing communities on coronavirus and social distancing. And this information was made available in multiple languages and with a choice of audio and visual options. The next issue was that the pamphlets about COVID-19 are in English and cannot be understood by Afrikaans-speaking communities in the Northern and Western Capes. And there, the response was, again, we relied on COVID-19 resource materials from other partners, and these were available in all coastal languages. And the official South African coronavirus WhatsApp support line is also available in a range of languages. The next issue was that government has issued permits to some KZN fishers, but only one permit for the whole cooperative, which goes to the chairperson. And the instruction is then that the chair must make photocopies for members. Under lockdown, these fishers cannot afford photocopies or access to such facilities. And the department fisheries branch couldn't concede that this was a relevant point. The lockdown happened the day before, so the day after we allocated fishing rights. So we had to accelerate the allocation of fishing rights to 35 small-scale fishing communities in KZN. And a further round of fishing rights was allocated on the 26th of March, which was just before lockdown. But we did our best using our local offices to assist small-scale fishers to get the photocopies of their permits. The next set of issues was what support were we providing to small-scale fishing during lockdown. So the department issued a public notice which indicated that small-scale fishing cooperatives that were recently allocated fishing rights in the Eastern Cape and KZN were granted an exemption in terms of Section 81 of the Act. Basically, that exempted them from having to be in possession of a valid fishing permit. We also processed and issued a Disaster Management Act form to the authorities that alerted them that permission had been granted to small-scale fishers. They were deemed to be part of essential services. They were exempted from lockdown regulations and requirements, and they were allowed to fish. Due to lockdown restrictions on travel, the department arranged for satellite offices to assist the cooperatives with making copies, in addition to sending the relevant documents via email, cell phone, and WhatsApp. A request was made to the department that the West Coast Rock Lobster season be extended to September, due to the extension of the lockdown provisions, and the department did oblige. In areas 1 to 7, we extended the season from March until June, and area 8 was extended from March until June for the nearshore, and from July to September for the offshore. And an extension of the fishing season, we couldn't go beyond these July and September dates because this would have had a negative impact on the status of the resource as females go into berry during these later months. There was an issue that I think this came from Masifundise, that of the 22,600 people who applied to be recognized as small-scale fishers, only 43% received their rights. And the department's response is Masi Fundisa would know, and we've raised with them and discussed with them in various meetings. Subsequent to the 4th of July is that we were guided by the policy and the act in terms of the definition of what is a small-scale fisher, and that the set of criteria were developed in conjunction and partnership with various role players and stakeholders at the time, including Masi Fundisa, who were very central to the development of the policy itself. In addition to the total of 11,020 who have been recognized as small-scale fishers, small-scale fishing cooperatives in the Northern Cape, Eastern Cape and KZN, a further 1,235 fishers were added, and they have been allowed to fish during the lockdown provisions. As the policy allows, after two fishing seasons post the allocation of fishing rights, each cooperative will be able to verify potential members for the delegated authority to declare them as small-scale fishers, and then they can become formal members of the small-scale fishing cooperatives. As everyone knows, the Western Cape lists are still being audited. In KZN, licenses and fishing permits are not translated into isiZulu, which means that the fishers do not properly understand their permit conditions. And again, the department would concede the validity of this comment, but in our defense, fishing rights were allocated on the 26th of March, and the national lockdown commenced on the following day, on the 27th of March. At that stage, the allocation letters were only issued in English. At alert level two, that allowed for interprovincial travel, the department sent a team to visit all the cooperatives that had been allocated rights in KZN, and they were taken through their grant of life, a right letter, and additional training and other information was provided. In addition to the training that took place at during alert level two, the department during alert level three, four, and five had weekly engagements with the cooperatives in KZN via WhatsApp, where information was translated and shared with the board members of the cooperatives. And we are working on translating all the necessary information into local languages. I will deal with this one, although it's not on small scale. It is on inland fishers. It was, I think, a question raised by Masi Fundisa. And it related to the rights of inland fishers. The department's response to this is that at the moment, inland fishers are not recognized or regulated in any way. And we have started the process of formalizing the sector through the development of a policy that aims to ensure the sustainable development of the inland fisheries sector. And after the extensive consultation is underway, the draft policy, inland fisheries policy, was presented to MINMEC on the 12th of June, where it was endorsed for approval to be tabled at the at NEDLAC, and that NEDLAC meeting took place last week, where the first round of discussions on the inland fisheries policy took place. The next slide just outlines the objectives of the fisheries policy, which there's a developmental component. The policy deals with equity and transformation, how to grow the inland fisheries value chains, sustainable fisheries management, co-management arrangements, institutional arrangements, legislation, public sector organizational capacity and training of officials and resource users. There was a question from KZN on many officials from the Sea Rescue Services issue fishing permits and implement decisions. No, sorry, it was a question. May officials from the Sea and Rescue Services issue fishing permits and implement decisions of the department? And the short answer is no at the moment. Issuing and granting of fishing rights, licenses and permits is a delegated function in terms of the Act at the discretion of the Minister. And the delegations are reviewed by the Minister when necessary, but currently officials from the Sea and Rescue Services are not authorised to issue fishing permits or to act on behalf of the Department. The next issue was that institutional capacity needs to be built and small-scale fishers need to be optimally placed and not remain at the bottom of the value chain. And here the department and the fisheries branch would agree wholeheartedly and would even go as far as saying that training is not a once-off. It's a continuous process that must, and training and capacity building initiatives must be provided to the small-scale fishing cooperatives for a number of years ahead. At the moment, we are busy with the Department of Small Business Development to look at small-scale fishing training needs. There was a question about what has happened to the CAF, the Consultative Advisory Forum. And the response to that is that the minister did gazette a call for nominations for CAF. She received nominations and a shortlist was done, but it was decided to headhunt and to extend the representativity of the CAF members so that CAF will be representative of all fishing sectors. There was an issue with the nominations received that was not representative of the entire fishing community. And that is still a process that is ongoing. The next issues on legislation, permitting and rights. Firstly, that small-scale fishers have not received recognition under the MLRA. And that small-scale fishers are recognized and subsistence fishers are not, and subsistence fishers need to be accommodated under the MLRA. This is a particular issue that comes from KZN, where certain groups of fishers in KZN opted not to be part of the small-scale sector, but opted to continue fishing on a recreational permit that they acquire from the post office. And I think the issue here was during lockdown levels 5, 4, and 3, recreational fishing was not allowed on a recreational permit. We've also, in terms of the MLRA, the Act was amended in 2000, more recognition of the small-scale sector for the first time in South Africa, and the amendment was done in line with the policy, and by agreement with all stakeholders at the time, one of the amendments included removing the definition of subsistence and artisanal fishers and replacing it with the definition of small scale. And there was broad consensus around the definition of small scale fishing and small scale fishing cooperatives, and it was deemed to be more inclusive than the other definitions. And it
recognizes that small scale fishes are fishing activities for own consumption. And there's the formal definition as per the policy. I'll read it. Small scale fishers are persons that fish to meet food and basic livelihood needs or are directly involved in harvesting, processing, or marketing of fish, traditionally operate on or near shore fishing grounds, predominantly employ traditional low technology or passive fishing gear, and usually undertake single day fishing trips and are engaged in the sale or barter or are involved in commercial activity, as directly from policy. Then there was an issue that was raised that there was a problem with getting snook into the basket of fish for and that government isn't assisting in this regard, and that snook is an important source of food that can address hunger. And this was from Masifundise. I don't know where this came from, to be honest, because snook was and has always been recognized as part of the basket of species for small-scale fishes. And during alert level 5 from the first day of lockdown, the snook run was beginning to take place in the, starting in the Northern Cape. It moved on to the Western Cape, and the department went to extraordinary lengths to assist small-scale fishers to be able to travel, despite the interprovincial ban on travel. We also opened accommodation on the West Coast so that fishers could overnight and access the snook. And we worked with SAMHSA, the South African Maritime Safety Authority, to get their vessels certified and licensed. And I can say that the snook run was a very good one this year, and I know many, many small-scale fishers benefited from it. we also worked with fish processing establishments that had licensed and were permitted. We encouraged them to buy fish from the local fishers, particularly in the Northern Cape, as those fishers in the Northern Cape were struggling to get their fish to the markets. We worked very closely with the Department of Tourism and Small Business Development. Well, firstly, with the Department of Small Business Development and Municipalities to get Langanas and Flekkers recognized in terms of the regulations as small-scale operators, and they were allowed to operate from alert level 5. We also engaged with various law enforcement agencies around the country, particularly on the West Coast and Northern Cape, where there were roadblocks, to ensure that fishers were able to access the snook runs. This again is the issue from Mr. Dessar from KZN, that they have been around for 160 years, but because of the definition of subsistence fishers, they weren't able to fish. I have addressed this one already, that the policy and the act was changed. The definition of subsistence fisher is no longer recognized in terms of the act, and it was replaced by a new definition of small-scale fishers. And the process to be recognized as a small-scale fisher was in KZN, was that all fishing communities who wanted to participate in the small-scale fisheries program were asked to sign an expression of interest, and this process opened up on the 28th of April 2015, and it ended at the end of June 2016, so the process was open for a full year. all fishing communities that signed the expression of interest were visited by officials from the department. And there's a list of communities in KZN that were visited. All those who were provisionally unsuccessful at the time were given a further 30 days to appeal. And based on the information provided, appeals were assessed and a final decision was taken. The small-scale fishers, declared fishers in KZN, were then trained and mobilized into small-scale fishing cooperatives and were assisted to apply for small-scale fishing rights. And the cooperatives were issued with small-scale fishing rights just before lockdown, and they were exempted from the lockdown provisions. There was a question again from KZN about fishers who rely on public transport, such as trains, to access the coast. Can government look to assist with subsidizing their transport? And unfortunately, at the moment, the department does not provide subsidies in any form to any fishers, including there is no subsidy for transport subsidies. The next issue was from Masifundise about fishers who've been shot in the MPA. And Mr. Jaffa from Masifundise was asked to provide the information to the portfolio committee on this particular shooting incident. Personally, I have not received that information, so we haven't been able to follow up. There was, however, a subsequent shooting incident in KZN in Isimangaliso, and the minister has commissioned a special inquiry into that incident. And then there was a question about people living next to MPAs who can't access them, even if the fish moves into the MPA and they're not allowed to follow the fish as they'll be defined. And the department's response is it's very hard to give a generic response to this because the terms and conditions of MPAs differ from MPA to MPA. Some MPAs you're allowed to fish and others are completely no-take areas. So it depends on where you are in the country. There was a complaint about the customer service center officials being rude. And there we are asking if there are ever any complaints of poor service, fishers are please requested to bring it to the attention of either myself or the head of the customer service center. And Chair, that's as far as the small scale goes. The next set of slides are about commercial and aquaculture, which I won't do at this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the approach we must adopt is that this is information that is responding to questions that were raised. And now we expect those who are representatives of the various small-scale farmers to take the information to their organization, but they might want to ask questions for clarity. Not everybody, those who do have questions for clarity, and I think even that applies to members after we have heard comments from the small-scale fishers in terms of clarity, because this is a response to the issues that were raised. Some might be outdated now. Can I be helped by the secretary if there's any of the small-scale fishers who would want to ask questions for clarity?
Yeah.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I can't see you. I'll not get disturbed if somebody raises by your voice.
Seeing that you can't see me, I'll put my video so no one can see me.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Yes.
We sent out a report, a research report that we had done as KZN subsistence fishermen, putting the facts on the table, Chair. And honorable members, I hope that each and every one of you have received the report, because it is captured in a way that shows discrimination, racism, also shows the shortcomings, how people have been treated as fisher folks. Chair, I'm saying this because we have written many letters to the department. We have captured those letters. We have exhibits of those letters. We have all the reports of all the engagements we had with the department, including the ministers. Becky Taylor was the deputy minister, all the ministers that visited us in Durban regarding subsistence fishermen. You will recall, Chair, this is from time immemorial, 160 years ago, when people were fishing as subsistence. And up until 2014, we were still fishing as subsistence fishermen, Chair. And let me say this, Chair, that in 2014, the port regulator in Durban, the port regulator, Chair, where we lodged a complaint about fishermen that weren't allowed to fish because of 9/11, Chair. After 9/11, the port authorities took a decision to ban subsistence fishing in the port, rod and reel fishermen, but they allowed the boats, Chair, to fish and go out and fish in the harbor and fish outside the harbor. But rod and reel fishermen were banned. We took the case and we won the case in 2014 that recognized subsistence fishermen in the Durban port as fishermen. Despite the fact that that happened, Chair, the same thing of discrimination where the rich and the elites were given the opportunity to fish. And the same thing happened during COVID, Chair. None of us knew about the policy that was removed from subsistence fishermen until we were being harassed by the policemen and being arrested and fined. And then we found, well, we no longer be part of it. We recall, Chair, that the Ezambela wildlife, the recreation SAPs and Metro were part of the harassment that has affected fishermen in KZN. Now, Chair, today, we've heard a presentation by the commercial boating companies and fishing companies. Only employ 2,000 people, right? But you have 25,000 people, Chair, that fish all along the coast from Cozy Bay all the way down, of all races, Chair, right down to Bumbulu, Port Shepston, Amkamaz, Park Rainey, Durban, all along the coast that fish. And we saw that, Chair, during the COVID, when there's so much of unemployment, and even before that, we saw people turn to fishing in their thousands. We saw how people were taking the resources in their tower from the sea and taking it home. Operation Paquita, Chair, the ocean economy, talks about a better life for ordinary people. The sea belongs to us, the ordinary people of this country, Chair. Why is it that the scientists and none of them are talking to the ordinary fishermen who are depriving a livelihood, who are doing a job, who are taking food and placing it on the table for their families? And yet, the department doesn't see those fishermen for a number of years. To take away their licenses, don't even consult to them, ignore them, don't even respond. The report talks to all that, and it gives you evidence of why did the department fail to come back and give responses to the KZN fishermen.
Sorry. I asked for questions for clarity, because now what you are presenting would require another response. So I thought, out of the feedback that you are getting from the department, there might be issues that you will not be able to engage with when you go back to your constituents.
That's why I said questions for clarity. But otherwise, we are noting some of the issues we are raising. But I don't want the others who must follow you to do the same. We don't have time. We're going to the house at 2 o'clock. Can we stop you there and allow another member? If there's any other member who would want to comment. Questions for clarity. So can I?
I'm sorry to find a way to lift my hand. My name is Nasir. I'm from Masifundi. I appreciate the first comment that you made that we would like to have a chance to go through the reactions from the department. It's not. Some of it are detailed, some of it need a little bit more reflection on our side. So we use that time. It need not be a long time. It could be a few days or a week, not more than 2 weeks. And then we can respond. To also acknowledge the earlier point that you had made that this was long ago, and to make comment as well that a lot of the issues that we raised then has indeed been addressed. Maybe not 100% to our satisfaction, but nobody can be 100% satisfied all the time. But I acknowledge also that there was recently a meeting that the department invited us to. And at that meeting, a number of these issues were also raised. But if I just make a very quick reaction to the story, I was not asking to be put in the basket, because I know it is in the basket. There was the big snook run at the beginning of COVID, and the proposal or the suggestion that people were making, including us, was that snook should be accommodated for or should be put into the food parcels that government is arranging with other partners as well. So just to clarify that, I think a point that needs to be reflected on substantially is the cooperatives are being organized as rights holders for the small scale fishing sector. We've raised the problem long ago substantively that the cooperative as a tool, as an entity alone, is not the best entity across the entire coastline, because it can't work given that traditions and cultures and local conditions are different. So, you know, this is a big issue that does not come through in the response, and we are asking for that to be considered. And alongside that is also the point that we have raised on numerous occasions, despite what the department is saying, that they've had thorough consultations and roadshows to identify people and to get people to sign up as small-scale fishers. There are thousands that have been left out still, despite that effort. So there's something structurally that is at fault that, you know, we have said many times before, and that is not being addressed, Chair. And
can we move to the next one? I think we have heard you. Might not have said everything, I think, but I agree with you. You must still go back and give yourself time. Any other hand? Can I then ask members if there are any comments you'd want to make? Otherwise, the arrangement is such that the report was to be given to them they ask questions for clarity, but I would love to hear your comments, honorable members. So no comment from the side of members. Department, is there any comment you want to make in relation to the comments that have just been made by the small-scale fishers?
Yeah, from my side, as the acting DG, none. I'll ask Sue and our other colleagues if they have any other comments in relation to what was said, Chair.
Okay.
Thanks, Acting DG and Chairperson. I think we won't respond to Mr. Desai's input. Masifundise, I'm sorry if I misunderstood the issue about snook. I can report that the Lionfish Association during the lockdown did make donations of snook to West Coast communities, particularly Lamberts Bay and St. Helena Bay, and to old age institutions as well. I think for the rest, Nasih, Mr. Jaffa, you did raise the issue about cooperatives in the meeting that we had with the department that you mentioned. And I think I'm on record to say that in terms of the fisheries branches program, we are due to review the Marine Living Resources Act in its entirety in the 21-22 financial year, and that is where this issue of definitions, including Mr. Desai's comments about subsistence fishers not being in the policy or in the definition, that is the opportunity for us to revisit both the legal entity and definitions. And I think the branch has committed itself to that process. For the rest, I think we will continue engaging regularly with the key stakeholders around the rollout and implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members and small-scale fishers, for the interaction. At least there's a document that we'll take home and we'll go through it at our own time. And if there's any feedback that needs, so that we can continue this discussions and trying to improve on what we are doing. Thank you very much. I'm sorry that I might have been very tight in terms of time. I know when we are together, we want to speak, all of us. Can I close the meeting? The meeting has come to the end.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, all the members, the MPs, and the leaders of the various organizations. We have come to the end of the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson.